Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your host, Chris Spangle. Joining me to my left, back for this episode, is Greg Lenz. Greg, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. How are you?
I'm peachy keen. And across the table, and I did say table, a few changes here on the show. Harry, how are you doing? Harry Price?
I'm going good. I'm glad we finally got a table. Feels nice and professional here.
I know. Yeah, I'm the type of person that likes the path of least resistance.
Mm.
So the path of least resistance for me is to no longer have my kitchen table and to have, not have a kitchen table and then put all my podcasting stuff on it. So once a week, I don't have to take it out.
The podcast command center.
Right.
Yeah. It stops the kitchen table from becoming a gigantic catch-all.
Right, which is kind of what it usually is. Although, I think Greg can attest to this. I'm fairly finicky about my place.
It's... Yes, you are. You're not anal.
Right.
But you are particular.
Yes. Particular is a good word. I just like my place to be nice.
Yeah. Anything, if it's messy or disheveled, it causes you strife and you get a little irritable.
There is, if you study Myers-Briggs... And, you know, I'm an ENFJ, although I question the extroversion part anymore. I like to just be left alone in my apartment here in the bunker. But the P, the perceiving, that means that those type of people like... I have to have my place clean and everything settled or else I can't think. Like, it just drives me crazy.
You have checklists... About making checklists.
That's right. So, and then the judging people, they're like, hey, let's just throw everything everywhere. And, you know, I just can't do that. I'm sorry. So, I like order.
Now, this is much more formal.
I know.
I mean, I am so used to just kicking back, relaxing. And this has a much more, you know, I feel like I have to bring my A game now that we're at a table and not a love seat.
Well, you should. This is a luxury apartment. Okay?
It is.
So
it is.
My open concept and lack of speed bumps in this complex, that means that when you show up here, success takes place in this apartment.
That's right.
Okay?
That's
nothing.
I do enjoy the lack of speed bumps when pulling in. There have a lot of sports suspension in my car, so every bump I feel in my back.
I speed like crazy through here.
I specifically try to hit all your neighbors.
Especially the police officer.
Well, I just try to hit his car.
He may be listening. Let's be careful. He nice guy, but he walked up. I randomly, he's like, oh, hey, yeah, you're this colored car and this make and model, and you're attached to this vehicle. And I'm like, how do you know so much about me and why? Oh, I'm paranoid. I just like to know my neighbors.
I bet he's run your license plate a few times.
God, yeah. Oh, yeah. Easily.
Probably pulled your FBI record since you one time were identified as an enemy of the state and interviewed by the Secret Service.
That is a true story. So my next-door neighbor decided to send, when I lived with my roommate, my mother, and in her basement, I was, you know, still there. I think I was 25, 26. And the next door neighbor was a diehard Republican. This was like 2006, 2007. I think it was 07. And Obama had come on the scene. And he sent an email to his sister in Maryland, whom he hates, and she hates him, and said, you know, this Obama guy, somebody needs to take him out. And she forwarded it to the Secret Service. I think maybe he had become president by that time. And so he got interviewed. They came in. They took all of his guns. They took all of his computers. And CZ was a home-based business, so his business shut down for a week. Hours and hours of interviews from the Secret Service. And when they got to the question, do you know anybody who wants to overthrow the government? He said, I was working for the Libertarian Party of Indiana at the time. So it was. It was 2009. And he goes, well, the kid next door, I know he does something professionally where his goal is to end all the government. he's like, I just wanted to let you know, and I'm really sorry, and I apologize. I'm like, dude, seriously?
This was not cool.
No. Nothing ever happened. I've flown since then. All is good. But I think through that experience, through knowing Maya, through being a funder of her social terrorism for years.
You are a direct contributor to jihad.
Social jihad.
Yes.
And so the... I'm sure I'm on the 1.2 million people that we discovered were on the list thanks to Citizen Four, the documentary that was done about Edward Snowden, which was an amazing... Have you guys seen Citizen Four?
No.
Okay.
I have it on my queue to watch, though. I've heard it's incredible.
Yeah, it's great, and it's really interesting to see how truthful Glenn Greenwald was, who just was walking through, you know, here's a guy who... Everything that Edward Snowden reportedly did during that time is backed up on video. You see everything that he did, you know, the leaving of his entire life and fleeing to Hong Kong and then trying to travel. You kind of find out later that his girlfriend, the Russian or the ballerina, eventually moved over to Russia with him, and they're together now.
Yeah,
good.
And that at the end, they reveal that there's another leaker who has more security clearances and was above Edward Snowden, and he's leaking material to Greenwald now.
And he's not identified, though, correct?
He's still in there. He's still gathering information.
He's within the NS...
He is...
Probably Booz Allen as a contractor or one of the other...
Something.
Yeah.
Creighton, I think, said he might have been arrested, but we haven't looked into that yet. But good times. I like the table setup. I did, you know, it is so nice to kind of have it all out and put together already, and just like walk up and sit down. And I think that's kind of led to the increased production to me, because like I just walked over, I sat my laptop down, plugged it into the board, and started talking to Joe Ruiz. And we've done two podcasts this week.
Was that on Tuesday?
Yes.
Tuesday. How did that go? I haven't listened to it yet. Yeah, I have that to listen to.
Well, there's a long-standing tradition of We Are Libertarians hosts not listening to this program. We discussed with Creighton Harrington. It was good. Joe, we talked about free-range children and the all the stuff that's happening in
Maryland.
Now,
is that a cooking no. procedure? Oh.
You have a little vinegar, you know.
Yeah, I didn't know exactly.
Honey.
No.
Is that like a trend in gluten-free?
No, it is not one of my organic nonsenses. But so this family in Maryland allowed their 10- and 6-year-old children to walk half a mile down to the park near their house. And I was mistaken. It was not an old, horribly disfigured woman. It was actually a former military guy walking his dog and saw these two kids and thought, gee, this looks strange. I better call the police. Instead of walking over and asking the kids, hey, is everything okay, kids? He called the police. The police came, responded within 5 minutes because it was such a dangerous neighborhood that the response time's 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they... didn't get their children back. They were taken into the custody of CPS. This is the second time, and their children were abducted by CPS. Didn't get them back for 10:30. Nobody called the parents until well after 8 p.m. when they were essentially arrested by the police officer for walking to the park at 5 p.m. So the parents are freaking out, not knowing where their children are, because their kids do it all the time, and now this is not normal. Where are they? And started freaking out because they didn't come back when they said they would. And the mother in an interview said, you know, well, we won't, you know, will you let your kids do this again? No, because we don't want our kids being abducted by CPS again.
Yeah, because the result is if they didn't get them back, they go in the foster care system, correct?
Right, so they had to sign a safety plan.
A wonderful track record of success.
Right. Oh, yeah, they don't touch kids at all.
A safety plan saying that they will not allow them to do this until an investigation is completed. And, you know, the parents now live in fear not of child molesters, but of their own government taking their kids from them. You know, this is not one of those cases where the mother and father, there's an immediate danger to the children. They're just doing what we did when we were kids. And so I talked with Joe about that. Joe has... a background in social work. I always forget that Joe worked as a social worker for years, and so he brought some perspective to that, and then also to being a parent, because he's the only parent. And we may actually, Gina was supposed to be here, although she's texting me now and may still stop.
Let me
by.
Ask you this: how old were the kids again? Sorry, I haven't followed this news story well.
10 and 6.
Okay, so that's pretty unbelievable. Do you know who Richard Branson is?
Yeah.
So Richard Branson's dyslexic, and he also was a real he wasn't the best child. He drove his mom kind of crazy because he's that typical ADD entrepreneur. When he was, I believe, 8, maybe 9, his mom took him on a shopping trip, and he was acting up, and he was in the back seat of the car. She drove 3 miles out into the countryside, got him lunch, and just left him and said, "Find your way home."
Wow.
And she did it as training for him to learn to overcome obstacles because he's dyslexic. So he couldn't read well. And it was to build him up, and he still attributes that to this day in nearly any interview as like the foundation of his success in order to be resourceful.
Wow.
So realistically, Richard Branson would be in CPS.
Totally, yeah.
And not a billionaire that works on galactic flight.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, and I've been pondering doing an interview with there's a website, freerangechildren.com, and I think it's lenorespeaks.com. And I heard an interview with the lady who started the Free Range Children thing and coined the term, and she's a fantastic speaker and just on point. So check that out. If we don't get around to an interview with her, then check out freerangechildren.com if I don't know. It's a tough question. And she really kind of hits to the point. We're a very scared society. Crime is down. Crime is dropped. Murder is down. Child abductions are down.
Drug use
is down.
Alcohol use among teens.
Right. And yet we are more afraid. And Joe and I talked about social media, the news, and why we're more afraid as a society. Considering the better angels of our nature have largely prevailed, as Steven Pinker put it in his book.
Yeah, overhyped statistics, 24-hour news media just keeps people afraid all the time.
That's the thing, the statistics don't point towards the outrage and the reaction, yet the media, the social sharing, and even like the satire and the fake news that gets shared, and it's happened to me. I mean, you do it, and then the next thing you know, there's these people that don't even care about something politically. They're sharing it all over, and they're convinced that the Chinese are like right off the West Coast, you know, and Obama's, you know, complicit in allowing the, you know, Chinese Communist Party and offering them safe haven in America.
Well, that's because people read the headlines. They don't actually read the stories, you know, and
TLDR society.
Right. Yeah. And you can take the mic out of the stand. You look uncomfortable hunched over there. I mean, you got to get it. If you're going to do that, you got to get into it. You got to get into your Rush Limbaughness.
I will never be Rush. There will never be another Rush.
Yeah. Big news.
Talking about YYZ or Rush? Oh,
yeah.
No, not the
band.
Not the band. Yeah, but this is going to be kind of a potpourri show. There's a ton to talk about, but nothing too specific.
Did you read the show notes?
I did, actually. I have them
all
up.
Right.
I have them up here. I took a long nap this afternoon because the show was not going to happen if I didn't. Like, the ability to think critically and speak and have an opinion or care that any of you are alive did not exist at 2 o'clock today. I fell asleep, woke up at 5:30, and now I mildly care that everyone's alive. But
Is that us or is that the listeners?
Everyone.
Well,
society. I was full. Excellent. I was full Maya at 2 o'clock today.
Oh boy!
And then I got a nap and I felt good. I woke up at 5:30 because I had set an alarm. I didn't think I'd sleep that long, but so I looked and at 5:30, which is a time when I will occasionally arise in the morning, although usually it's 4:30, and so I freaked out. I was like, I'm behind. I'm running late. And then I looked at the text message that I got, and it said PM. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So that's always a stunning way to wake up. all right. So Rush Limbaugh actually got dropped, and we don't often talk about Rush Limbaugh here on the We Are Libertarians show. I don't think that he really has much in the way of offering our audience anything. But I will say that I know I grew up listening to Rush.
I listen to Rush still, and I do mainly because I don't think anyone does a better job of trolling liberals than Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
He invented it, basically. I mean, no one had come along, and he isn't the intellectual leader that, like, the guys that came before him were, that were the leaders of the GOP. But he invented how to troll well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, with just some of his great quotes, like the aborted caller hotline. I mean, that's, you talk about making, you know, the left just outraged. He had had them put together a vacuum vocal and then a guy screaming and have him mix it together. And then whenever he'd try to figure out how many seconds he had to let the person be on before it was a human life and he could abort it. And so they were on, I believe it was like 28 seconds. That was equivalent of the time Roe versus Wade decided. And so as long as he didn't like the caller, he could abort right before life happened. Of callers.
He was. In the early days, he was so innovative in trolling and was very funny, very creative. If you go back and watch some of the older YouTube channels, and he had a TV show for a while, and I had actually videotapes of the show.
Oh, absolutely. The Rush Room at the Adams Mark Hotel here in Indianapolis at noon, people would go and watch. Like,
really?
Businessmen around the city out at the airport would, down where I think the Omni is now. They'd go down there. It was the Rush Room. Then you'd go up and watch the Rush Limbaugh show at lunch and smoke cigars and talk about the South.
War of Northern Aggression. Sorry, Harry. Didn't mean to make it awkward. So Rush is. Yeah, I joined Rush 24/7 for a work-related thing. I work for a nationally syndicated radio show, and we have services similar to his, so I kind of wanted to see what the competition was doing with their video and audio stuff. And so I joined, and I've listened the last couple days, the last two or three days, still mildly entertaining. Absolutely nothing of political substance. I mean, you get
economically he does well, but that's about it.
He wouldn't even mention Rand Paul's name, but promoted Marco Rubio like you would not believe.
He did bring up Rand Paul a lot this week, because only after Rand did troll the abortion question,
right?
Oh, and he nailed that. That was a home run against Debbie Wasserman
Rand
Schultz.
Rand Paul nailed it. We'll talk about that in a minute, but so Rush. His voice is terrible, man. He needs, like you said, a nice long vacation or something.
Yeah, he has just worn out his pipes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And coming from the industry, I'll tell you, there is a series of no-buys on this guy that is, if your radio station carries Rush, or if you are on the premier radio networks, or if you are working on a Clear Channel station, like anything remotely affiliated with Rush Limbaugh, there are just whole industries and whole slews of advertisers that just will not advertise with your station. And it affects everybody. And it's actually greatly hurt the talk radio, the political talk radio industry, and all the conservative hosts and the networks and stations that carry them. And so you're starting to see a lot of stations drop Rush Limbaugh. And probably the first big one would be Indianapolis, where we live. And they dropped Rush at they've carried him for 22 years. I mean, to turn on WIBC in the afternoon and hear Rush Limbaugh is like, that's our childhood, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you know it's noon or between noon and 3.
Right.
And he still, I mean, even though he's not going to be on here, you watch what he covers, that is the news cycle that day.
Yes. Sure.
I swear.
Yeah, especially with the news media. I mean, Drudge and Rush do set a lot of the template. Mitten sneezed. Are you okay, honey? All right. Gotta take care of my kids. So I think you're going to see, and basically they, if you read between the lines, admitted the fact that, hey, now we can get a lot more advertisers coming back.
But who do you replace that with? It's like replacing Oprah.
You replace it with money.
No, but I mean, what content do you put on that's going to deliver that listener base?
So radio ratings are like every other ratings. You can manipulate the numbers to make it look however you'd like. And WIBC, their morning show, is pulling the same numbers in certain categories and the chicks on the right. For them.
They're entertaining.
They're
funny. They're at least funny.
Get out of my house. And so
you're kidding me.
I can listen to Daisy Mock. Tony Katz. Oh man, no,
get out.
What's wrong with Daisy and Mock?
Awful, awful, worst.
It's like taking Rush and getting rid of all the brain. Instead of just half the brain tied behind his back, it's literally like a lobotomy.
There's two brains tied behind their back. So the way that WIBC spins it is that their numbers are pulling the same amount as Rush, which may or may not be true. Rush still pulls good ratings, but if you can't sell the time slot, mm-hmm. and the show is costing you, let's put it this way. That show, depending on your market, but generally it's a flat fee. Like, there's some shows that if you listen to a syndicated radio show, the station pays carriage rights to the syndicator. And Rush is by far the most expensive show to carry.
Oh, he signed that $400 million eight-year deal back in 2012.
Right.
So I think that's going to be pretty tough to swallow, because I bet they had to prepay for the full amount for that time period.
Yeah. And so as a result, because of that contract, they also take more inventory. So you as a local station have less time to sell. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, you can't make your money back. And so if you look at it, it's like, put on Dana Lash or
because she is way less offensive than Rush Limbaugh.
Right. If you go to Move On or Daily Coast or whatever, if you go to StopRush.com, there is a whole spreadsheet database website of all of the advertisers of not only Rush Limbaugh's network show, but all of the sponsors on all of the local affiliates for Rush Limbaugh. So you as a leftist organizer, activist, can start calling these advertisers, calling the ad networks, calling the ad agencies and say, you know, I'm not going to buy your product because you advertise on Rush Limbaugh. And that started with Sander Fluke and built into a movement and has had some effect because Rush is hard to monetize.
And I remember, though, even before that, when he did a Hannity interview on Fox News right after President Obama was elected and said, I hope he fails. It was, you know, it dominated the news forever. That's when I really remember that movement starting.
Right.
And I'll remember when Glenn Beck was still on Fox. And Glenn, like, he did the same. He had a different type of coverage, but he really harped on socialism a lot.
Right.
And he used to do these, you know, history lessons on socialism and tying it to the president. And all of a sudden, it became cash for gold. It became food insurance. It became, you know, those types of advertisers. And I was like, this is bad. Because now it's starting to look like late night infomercials that are, you know, the commercial segments.
Right, yeah. And then in the ads, like, listen to WIBC, most of the ads during that time slot only target people who are, what, 50 plus?
Yeah.
That's the... Excuse me, I was taking a drink of water, doing my Marco Rubio impression. That is the problem, is that Rush's audience is drastically older, and that's one of the reasons that WIBC, I know this is inside baseball, but 10 years ago, their audience was like 50% was over 60. Well, that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so they
lost half of that because they're dead.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that is just a small sliver of what is happening to Rush's audience across the nation. They're all in their mid-70s.
Yeah.
And so if you're a local station like WIBC and you have to, you're reconsidering your Rush Limbaugh contract and you say, do I have another 5 years to let that time slot erode and die off, literally, or do I put in somebody like a Dana that just is going to attract younger, or the chicks on the right who are going to attract a younger audience? And so
I just feel like you're attracting a dumber audience regardless.
But
they're
see,
entertaining for the drive home.
But
I want something nice and uplifting.
No, here's what you don't. You seriously, this is
this is like
say your piece because this is your last time here.
Yeah. If I hear one more word of praise for chicks on the right,
I might come across this table and beat your ass. But see, here's what the problem is. Mass media doesn't care about... we're not going to go out on a limb and say that Rush Limbaugh's intellectual, okay? Or that he is...
He's a step above, though, Hannity and Laura Ingraham. And I mean, the only one that I'd put above him is Mark Levin.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one I'd say is even remotely more intellectual. Rush actually dedicates entire segments to explaining supply-side economics. The chicks on the right talk about, oh my God, did you see this happen? I love Sarah Palin. She's so wonderful. Look at her new hairdo.
Oh my God, Hillary has canker.
Yeah, yes, that's the level of political analysis you're getting is whether or not Hillary had Botox on her crow's feet.
But that's why shows like our show is so important, is because you're going to hear... You tried to defend them. You better stop. I'm serious. They're killing my industry. What you have to understand is mass media they care about profit. And it doesn't matter. We are political animals. We are talk radio fans. And so we like talk radio because we want to hear something, because it's a topic that interests us. Mm-hmm. Whether you agree with what he or Savage or Glenn Beck or anybody, no matter what, or your local guy, you want to listen because it makes you mad or because it evokes some emotion. You care about, if you listen to this program, we know you care about political policy and libertarianism and changing the world in a libertarian direction. And so you probably don't listen to a lot of talk radio. Glenn Beck may be the only mass media talk radio show host that
Stossel,
but he doesn't have a talk radio show. But Beck may be the only one that is openly admits to moving in a libertarian direction. Obviously not an anarchist, but self-identifies as a libertarian. And
that'd be a quantum leap. So holding him to that standard of saying Glenn Beck's libertarian, now he's a voluntarist. That's not going
to
happen.
Honestly, I listen to Glenn Beck all the time, and I will tell you, the guy has... I'm admittedly a longtime Glenn Beck fan. Like, I started listening in 2002 when he came on the air. I've met him a few times. I worked board op to his show. I mean, I've followed him for a long time, and I'm a couple years ahead of where he is in the libertarian arc, where you are a conservative, and then you go, wow, none of this stuff makes sense. Let me look at other stuff. You start meeting John Stossel in his case, meeting Penn Jillette in his case, all these libertarian people. He's had Tom Woods on, and he's now kind of moving in that direction. I mean, he's arguing, who is he arguing against recently? Like, we shouldn't go to war in Syria, Iran, anywhere. Like, he's not non-interventionist, and he's not for open borders. He's not...
Not yet.
Yeah. So, but he's definitely on that path, and it's kind of interesting to see this major talk radio figure and somebody with the reach that he has with the Blaze, with his TV
A
network.
Fundamental Christian. Or, well, yeah. Mormon.
And to see him bring along his co-hosts, who are hardcore conservative, don't like Rand Paul. So it's kind of... interesting to see him wrestle with his Mormonism and his conservatism and his discovery that libertarianism is just right and makes sense. And how do you work that out? You know, we're working it out in front of 3,000 people. He's doing it in front of like...
10 million, 15 million?
10 million on radio and then probably another 2 million on TV and streaming.
And then how does that work? So he still has like a broadcast deal like Rush, but then that's on mm-hmm. that's syndicated, but then he has a paying subscriber internet television show.
Right.
Yes. Gotcha. And that gets access to inside content, paid content mm-hmm. on a website.
Yeah, you $10 a month if you join, then you get the TV, all the TV network on demand and live streaming, which it's also on Dish Network and a few other cable
stations. And
that's
daily. That many viewers daily. Oh, that's God, as many as Conan O'Brien.
Oh, yeah. Way more. Yeah.
That's pretty nuts. Like a late night comedy show on TV. That's more.
Yeah. No, Beck's from some of this is all inside baseball, and I find it interesting because this is what I do, and also because I'm a talk radio fan. But it's. It's kind of interesting to see the traditional conservative talk radio wane and not be as powerful. I don't think that Rush Limbaugh has near the political power that he did in 1994. He's definitely not the cultural force he was. And does talk radio in this day and age set the template for healthy political thought? I would say no.
No.
Yeah, no.
I think that if you listen to talk radio for political opinions, you're in trouble. If you listen to talk radio for entertainment, then it's okay.
I think YouTube has supplanted talk radio as sort of thought leadership within the political parties, and you know that 3-5 minute segment on values and different issues.
Yeah, the ability to show graphs, get the feedback from people in the comment. A lot of the problems of a lot of radio conservative have is their call screeners. They like to screen out anyone who has too much of a different of opinion, and the fact that the person behind the microphone controls the conversation, and won't anyone differ from that?
Yeah, that top-down model just doesn't fit the social media world.
Exactly. Like, why would I call into your show and have to force me to talk what you want to talk about when there's like 30 million other shows I can just probably get on and just
get on a subreddit thread and have the political debate you actually want to have with
exactly, right. Or a Twitter hashtag and just have a conversation with people,
Or get attacked.
Yeah.
And I think we've found on this show that if we want to unpack something, it takes an hour to unpack something. And in talk radio, if you have an hour and you're Rush Limbaugh, I'd have to look at the clock, but I would say that Rush probably has in an hour 25 to 30 minutes of actual showtime.
I'm pretty sure, yeah, he's just above a half hour.
Right, which is pretty standard. At the old days, WIBC's morning show had 7 minutes for content. We had 20 minutes on Abdul in the morning. And we were an intellectual show, but you have so in the morning show, you've got so much weather, traffic, news updates,
Ag report
commercials. You've got all this, you know, all these barter
interviews.
Yeah. And then, so if you want to do an interview, you've got 5 minutes. And so it's very hard to do
analysis
and
commentary.
And,
yeah.
Right. And if you look at like somebody like Abdul, our friend who is a reporter with an entertaining flair and a flair for gossip as well, he gets an hour on WIBC, and Chicks on the Right, who don't do any study, any research, have really nothing to add to the political debate.
So Abdul teaches law classes at law school. Right. These girls teach Pilates.
Right. And they get 4 hours now. But
now,
people,
what were you saying,
sympathizer? People like Harry think that they're entertaining.
Now, they're entertaining on my ride home. When Abdul is on, I end up sitting in my driveway for 30 minutes continuing to listen to Abdul as I sit in my car. And everyone's like, you just sit in your car and keep listening. I can't keep doing that.
So
I need to get inside.
So they're disposable, is what you're saying. They're superfluous and they don't matter, and you feel absolutely you have no problem just walking away from them?
Well, yeah, yeah.
Well, then that gives me all I need to know. Right. I can't wait to listen.
It's pop radio.
Well, the same way with Garrison. Like, I get in my car right when he hits his first commercial break after the 11 o'clock hour, and I get home for lunch right when he kicks off. This way I know I'm on time.
So really, he has replaced the watch. Greg Garrison has replaced your watch.
Yes, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Well, like, I first wanted to talk
radio. That's what they want to hear, too. That's how they can sell advertisers. the people on the drive home are so irrelevant that really you wouldn't miss them because you have no problem walking out on their show.
Yeah.
And the people at lunch, or the individual at lunch, is just, really, he's a replacement for a watch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But a patriotic replacement. A free replacement in every sense of the word.
All right, so let's move on to our next topic. But before we do that, let's talk about audibletrial.com/We Are Libertarians. If you are like us, you don't listen to talk radio anymore. You listen to podcasts. I listen to over-the-air radio all morning, but then after I leave, I'm not a music person. I'm generally a podcast person, so I'll catch up with podcasts during the day, and I ingest information usually for this show and for, you know, to sharpen my skills. And I also listen to a lot of audiobooks. I love audiobooks because I have trouble sitting down and reading and paying attention for a very short amount of time. So audiobooks generally are the best way for me to ingest information. Do you guys listen to audiobooks at all?
Yes.
I do. Yes. Yeah. I prefer although I still listen to talk radio because I still think they have so many years of experience. It's the best place to actually learn the craft of being interesting, of how should I say that? I just think they do an excellent job of putting out the most professional version of a broadcast medium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's get back to Audible. What is an audiobook that you guys have enjoyed?
I enjoy, I listen the crap out of Eat That Frog, and a lot of Murray Rothbard for New Liberty.
All right. Eat That Frog is available on iTunes, or on audible.com. You can also get it on iTunes, but, sorry, yes.
Wow. Just in case you're listening right now.
We'll explain in a minute. Let me finish the commercial. So if you go to listen to Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy, or if you want to listen to For a New Liberty, that's also on audible.com. And we're going to give you a free audiobook today. If you go to audibletrial.com/WeAreLibertarians, you can also go to WeAreLibertarians.com, scroll to the bottom. You get a free audiobook, and then if you stay on Audible in their monthly subscription, after the first month, we get a little piece of it. And so by getting a free audiobook today, you are supporting We Are Libertarians. So again, that is audibletrial.com. Check it out. And we really appreciate your support. Joining us here on the show is the lovely, effervescent, and smart Gina Martinez. Gina, how are you doing?
I am good. How are you guys?
We're peachy. So the doorbell rang, and I'm in the middle of the Audible commercial. And so I just look up, and I see Harry, the first person out of the corner of my eye. And I go, hey, can you go get the door? And apparently I've started a race war in my own apartment.
There was an expectation by that I could read right off the look in your eyes. And it was one of, I don't know, it felt racist.
Yeah, super racist. I should have known. He told me to pick up chicken on my way in here and to wear my bow tie.
That's actually true.
Yeah.
Hey, I had fried chicken for dinner, so.
I wanted
Chick-fil-A. But did you have someone go pick it up for you? Because I like to call that white privilege.
I actually made that by hand with the Fry Daddy.
Boom.
I've got a Fry Daddy.
It sounds all American, but I used tempura batter, so I guess it's not.
So it's multicultural.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I
But Harry was available. He totally could have handled it for me.
So I just...
The white guilt is not strong in this room.
No, it's just...
I didn't ask him to bring me Chick-fil-A because he's black. I asked him to bring me Chick-fil-A because we were in communication, and it's delicious.
Seems to be a lot of coincidence.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I treat Harry like a normal human being, and if that is racist, then...
And he doesn't treat Chick-fil-A like oppression, which the rest of us know it is.
Welcome back to the podcast, Gina.
I know you miss me.
I know. Guess what? They hire Mormons, they hire gays, and their chicken is delicious.
I know.
You can't
taste
the racism.
I honestly used to love Chick-fil-A. Truly did. As a product, they have a fabulous product. I just have issues with their political philosophies.
Sure. And hold that mic a little more direct for me.
Oh, I shall eat it next time.
There you go. Atta girl. I'm sorry, I didn't mean girl. I meant atta woman that deserves all the...
That's racist.
Yeah.
Racist.
And he's just like knocking them out of the park today, isn't he?
You can't do anything in society without being... If you are...
No, you can. You totally can.
Yeah.
No, you can't do anything in society today without being a racist.
Once we get rid of all these cis white males, the world would be a better place.
Right. I agree.
Except that we can't get rid of all the cis white males.
Yeah, we can.
No, okay. That wouldn't be revenge.
That would be genocide, and can we just put them in favor of that.
How about just camps?
I'm not in favor of
what
camps
kind of camp?
Or genocide.
I don't know, just some happy, faraway camps. We don't have to see them anymore.
I do think there's a market, since everybody's so distracted with the age of social media, for a camp specifically on learning how to concentrate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You guys are fucking filthy.
Concentrate on their white privilege.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let them just sit and stew.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listen to cis white male over there saying let them.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm Native American, so get off my land.
Check your privilege.
Yeah. I am Cherokee. I was here first. Why are you on my land?
Right. How much Cherokee are you?
I'm about an eighth.
About an eighth?
You're an eighth that I know of, but
so
then
you
again.
Got one grandparent?
No, I have two. Well, it's funny.
Okay.
It's kind of gossip and rumor, but two great grandparents that were both Cherokee.
Okay.
But we're not sure. Like, there's some discrepancies on where exactly who was born when.
Was it the same? So, did those two great grandparents create the same grandparent that you claim is your 1/8? Yeah, were they married to each other?
That's where the discrepancy is.
Okay. So, you're claiming it, and I'm going to go ahead.
You can call BS. I don't actually know.
He is swarthy as hell, okay?
Claim it on your taxes.
I'm gonna
claim
give it to you,
can.
But in the last picture I saw of you on the golf course, let's just say your tan wasn't all that gleaming.
Oh, he's like Rush Jr. over here with his cigars.
Right.
And
I don't have a cigar.
I should play the George Carlin bit about cigars. Oh,
is this
God.
A Clinton joke?
No, it's not a Clinton joke. It's like, haven't we had enough of the...
Time out, I'm in the blue dress.
I know you are! Oh my gosh. Hold on, I gotta go down to that 7-Eleven right down at the end of the corner and come back with a cigar.
A couple swishers.
You have to call Gina the intern the rest of the show.
Oh, I beat you all.
No, I snapped a photo and I'll put it up on our Instagram page so you can see the new studio setup and Gina... I opened up YouTube, and the very first thing I see is Monica Lewinsky, The Price of Shame, her TED Talk. Yeah. So that's pretty funny.
God bless her.
She is doing really cool stuff with bullying. I mean, mm-hmm. It's really
is
awesome.
She?
Yeah. Oh, that's what she's dedicating. She's got a foundation, and she's been doing, like, I mean, she experienced bullying.
No doubt.
She's the original, like, person that got cyberbullied.
Okay, cyberbullying.
Yeah, no, not really bullied, but like, you know, since the internet was so new.
Right.
You know, what's interesting is... friend of mine there's a local school here, and their kids are not allowed to talk during lunch hour.
That's so messed up.
Like, it is, you have to be totally silent, and if you talk, you go to the principal. Because if you talk, like, you go to lunch, and you eat in total silence, because they're trying to prevent bullying.
And whoa, so they're preventing socialization on all levels in order to prevent bullying?
Yes.
Wow.
So we are taking...
Because they're not Facebooking and just writing it on their wall while they're sitting there at lunch?
I don't approve of this decision.
This is an elementary school, and it's all the way up to high school, and so you are squashing freedom of thought and expression...
And socialization.
Creating good little robots. Mind your manners, kids.
Yeah, I wouldn't know any their statistic on male dropout ratio for that, though.
Greg has prepared the show notes.
Which was awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
Too bad it didn't matter much.
Oh, right. That's what we're getting to now, okay?
No way. This is way more fun than talking about Austrian economics.
Yeah.
Well, we got to talk about something. So,
Can we talk about the guy landing the helicopter on the White House or the Capitol lawn?
We didn't. Yeah, we talked about that off air. But yeah, let's do it. Why not?
We discussed the fact that there's like an investigation going on with the Tampa newspaper who had to the minute updates with what was going on.
Really? That's interesting.
Yes.
No, I have not heard that.
I haven't read the entire article, so I put myself on the spot.
All right. Well, let's do that after we do the next topic so you
their
can.
Their role is being examined.
Really? So, why would their role be examined?
They were literally reporting to the moment what was happening. So people are implying that they had sort of a heads up or knew that it was...
I got to the moment because I had friends on the National Mall it landed 200 yards from them and were sending me text messages, pictures, and I was like, stop it. I don't want to be investigated.
Why did you
quit
not
sending them?
See, next time you should...
I got them right here.
Yeah, you should have sent those to me. We could have been breaking news.
I tried to, but you were napping with your cats.
Shut up.
You were busy taking Snapchats and sending them to Aaron Ewert.
Ewert. Ewert.
Because otherwise, you know, you would have got them.
So it says a Florida newspaper that knew ahead of time that a man planned to fly a gyrocopter into restricted airspace at the U.S. Capitol faced questions Thursday about whether its editors should have used this knowledge to try and stop the risky stunt. So I guess the question is,
no.
Were they obligated to stop it if they knew in advance that it was happening?
Hell no.
Are they sort of collaborators, I guess?
If they knew about it, they knew that he intended no harm, that it was a political stunt because he had a message. It was about, I think it was about campaign finance reform or something. It was a political stunt. He wasn't going there to hurt anybody. And secondly, they're journalists. They don't have to tell the government. Well, now I can curse. They don't have to tell the government shit.
That's right.
So, that's what the First Amendment is about. It's within their discretion to print and publicize whatever they like, and they had inside access to a newsworthy story, and they knew that nobody was going to get hurt, except maybe this guy.
Yeah.
I mean,
He will now.
Yeah, oh.
He's about to get hurt.
Yeah. And I'm sure that he knows that. I'm sure he knew that going into it. I think he's like a postman, so he's one of them.
I guess he works
for the federal government.
Bro, he delivered a letter. And I think he went above and beyond and should be applauded for his ingenuity and commitment to great service.
If every postal worker was just like this dude, then we would all, they wouldn't be bankrupt.
Forget FedEx. Forget UPS.
Right.
Give them gyrocopters.
Right. The newspaper actually interviewed them in advance, took photos and videos of the gyrocopter. But apparently Brown said the reporter made no comment to do a story and made clear the newspaper was not his partner. So.
Right. And even if they were his partner, they're journalists, and it's up to them, not the government, to decide what is appropriate.
And our federal government, FDR, had pretty, I mean, he didn't know it with absolute certainty, but he had pretty good fair warning that Pearl Harbor was going to happen. And so to hold someone to that standard is pretty hypocritical to me.
By this government? Yeah.
Yes.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Gina, so have you looked into what happened in Maryland with the CPS abducting the children? And
yeah, I've heard about the free range.
The free range children. Yeah. Joe and I did a whole episode on it. But you are the other parent in the Wallaverse.
Yes.
What are you, we've filled it? I think we talked about this on air, right?
Great.
So on this episode, so people listening are a little caught up on what exactly happened. So what are your thoughts as a parent first? On what happened, and then we'll ask your opinion on free-range children and how your parenting style.
In this particular situation, from what I've read, and so I've always got to preface that because I wasn't there, definitely government overreach, definitely an offense on the part of the police officer that I think the parents should be able to, I guess, take legal action and get some sort of compensation for the trauma that their children went through. I don't necessarily agree with allowing their children to be that far out of their supervision by themselves, but I do think that their philosophy has merit as far as teaching children to be self-sufficient and self-reliant. I see nothing wrong with that.
Right.
I think that the first time it happened, you know, it was an issue, but then the second time that it happened, it was clearly retribution.
Right.
And I think that it is abduction on behalf of the police officer who told them that he was taking them home and then took them to the station. People lie to children all the time, and cops lie to civilians all the time. I don't think it's right, particularly in this case, and I do think that it should. It fits the grounds for abduction.
Right.
Those children weren't breaking any laws. They weren't doing anything to endanger themselves or others. They were walking home, and from what I read, they were pretty darn close. So it absolutely sounds like retribution to me, and harassment at a minimum, abduction more likely being more relevant to the situation.
Yeah. So I asked Joe this, and Joe kind of said, you know, it's a case-by-case basis.
Sure.
It depends on how old they are, what the, you know,
child's maturity level.
Right. I mean, mm-hmm. his older daughter, I think he said was 6, let her go play out in the front yard, you know, with him at the window watching.
Right. Right. Well, that's the way most of us are. We're hover parents.
Right. And he took offense to
my generation.
Yeah. He took offense where we all, I imagine Greg and Harry, we were free range children. I rode my bike all over Plainfield,
right.
All over town.
Right.
All the time.
And let me tell you, that was back when Plainfield wasn't safe.
The mean streets of Plainfield?
Man. Yeah.
Let me tell you, no.
You ever seen 8 Mile?
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, you rode your bike across town to Bill's baseball card shop, and you were getting roughed up.
I mean, it's Quaker community.
Andrew Hanna flat out stole a David Robinson Olympic basketball card from me.
That filthy bitch.
He swindled me. He swindled me. I hold it against him today.
I'm a geek. My parents had to kick me out of the house. when I started to skateboard and leave, they paid for my skateboarding habit, so I would just get out of the house and do something.
Yeah.
Because I would just stay up in my room, play with my computer.
Oh, I ran amok.
Oh, I bet.
Could
you imagine?
I would guarantee that.
At 13, I had a moped. What's up, bitches?
Could you imagine Gina at 13, let alone on a moped?
If Gina were my child,
fuck you guys.
I'd be positive God was trolling me. Absolutely positive that I had made terrible life decisions and this was God's vengeance.
So
I got my first 28.8 modem at 13.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you were global.
I apologize for calling you racist for asking him to get the dorm.
I wasn't racist.
Take it all back.
So, Gina, how old are your kids, if you don't mind sharing?
8 and 2.
Okay.
Yep.
Obviously, the two-year-old is...
He's on his own. Hit the bricks.
He's constantly trying to commit suicide, and your job is to stop him.
Essentially.
The eight-year-old...
He's kind of leveled off on that, though. He doesn't climb anymore, so...
Vinny is...
He's two, and he doesn't climb anymore.
At eight, when he was smaller, like, when he first... He couldn't actually walk. He could support himself on other things and get around the room. There was one time... when I came out of the bathroom and I found him on top of a writing toy on going up a bookshelf like the one next to you, and he could reach the second or third shelf.
At one?
The kid couldn't fully walk, but he could climb in that. So when Spangle says, you know, they're small people trying to commit suicide perpetually and it's your job to keep them safe, at one point in time, that's absolutely what I was up against.
And Vinny is 8 going on... 58. I mean, he's incredibly bright, very outspoken, curses like a sailor.
Only with mom. Although he did in front of Grandpa and it didn't go well.
So has Vinny, because you allow him to curse, we've talked about this on the...
Yes, at home I do allow him to speak his mind freely.
The now retired Storytime with Gina. If you go to wal-radio.com,
you can pass all that. Take our word for it.
You can listen to all the glorious back episodes of that. But very smart kid, very independent.
Yes.
So what are the rules with him? I mean, you live in an apartment complex like me.
Right.
I think there's a jungle, knowing the apartment complex, I think there's like a jungle gym or something.
A little playground.
It. Yeah. I mean, does he get to go to the playground by himself?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Within the last year or two, though.
Okay.
And it's maybe, it's not quite a football field from my front door.
Okay.
So it's across... Yeah, it might be 600 feet from my front door.
Okay.
Yeah, he can go there by himself. Last week, actually, he got really good at riding the bicycle. No supervision, no assistance, no training wheels.
Right.
Kind of behind the curve on that one, but I had to finally get out there and put his nose to the grindstone. You will learn this. You will learn this today. So he can ride his bike now. He doesn't go very far. He can, but he's never asked how far he can go. And
sure, he'll test those limits as he gets there.
Right, but as it is, we live off of a fairly busy street, and I won't let him leave the apartment complex for sure.
Yeah, and you've got like a nice little cul-de-sac almost.
Right.
And I said last week, I mean, I rode my bike, but if you ride too far, you know you're going to get in trouble, and so you just use your decision. I mean, to me, if I had kids, I would think that it would be important for their... growing their decision making, their risk assessment,
development.
And developing that for them to get to ride around. So, Greg, I know you probably don't plan on having children on purpose, but I mean, what do you think about? I understand Joe and most parents when they say I couldn't live with myself if anything happened to my kids because I have a niece, and if I was watching my niece and something happened, I couldn't function. You know, and I'm sure as a parent, it's like times 20.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
I agree, but don't you have to slightly like... I imagine you can't. I actually can't imagine.
Spit it out. Can't imagine what?
That don't you have to balance that with like also making sure that the kid turns out to be self-reliant
and
independent?
Like it's difficult because you don't want to screw the kid up by hovering too much, and you don't want to screw the kid up by letting go too far. And so in the situation that we're talking about that made the news, the free-range kids, you've got parents who have made a decision. And if I'm not mistaken, they're really well-educated professionals.
Yeah.
Like, even in the medical field, perhaps, if I've read correctly. But they've decided what their children are capable of. And in this situation, the government's like, yeah, well, we don't agree, so we're snatching your children.
And we're always right because we have guns.
Right, exactly. Militarization of the police. By the way, who's got your kids? The police. Why? They were walking less than a mile away from their home.
Well, I mean, they are kind of lucky because remember that 12-year-old in Cleveland that got shot with a fake gun?
Yeah.
Right after Mike Brown Garner? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, Eric Garner.
I mean, it's not like you're going way too far. You're going, you know, why are you trying to take it into the absurd? Like, no. Those kids very well could have got shot.
It's been established. It's like
Yeah, well, you're arguably, it's way more dangerous for your child to encounter a police than just a regular individual in their neighborhood.
Depending on the individual.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be, yeah. I mean, would be more comfortable with my kids being abducted by a cop than, say, Jeffrey Dahmer or John Wayne Gacy.
True.
But at the same time, I don't want anybody abducting my children, including and not limited to the motherfucking police.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So that's
authoritarian stranger danger.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So thank you for weighing in on that. That's one of the reasons. And we are going. We are committed to every Thursday night, 6 o'clock
ish. Ish. I like that.
Yeah.
So and the topics in which I think you will find interest, I will alert you.
Okay.
And in the topics that you will not care about
tonight, I will not. After reading my show notes, were the topics you thought they'd be interested in?
Honestly, I sent her the show notes and she still showed up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Nice. So
you
let's.
Guys, I have a brain. I'm.
I know that.
Econ.
I thought it was a total nerd, like nerd. You
it
know,
was a complete nerd.
Nerdgasm.
And sometimes you take it there like super nerd, and I encourage you to educate me, an audience, I used fingers there, finger quotes, educate me so that I make sure that the average listener can both follow and be edutained, if you will.
that's what we do here. So let's
edumacated.
Get to the show notes. But before we do, I want to say go to the podcast, go to our website. That's what I want to say. WeAreLibertarians.com. We added a new, sort of added two new podcasts. There's obviously The Cap with Joe, so look up the Culture and Arts podcast. You can get the links at WeAreLibertarians.com. The Chris Spangl Show, which is not actually a show. It is just basically there are random pieces of audio on there that I want to go back and listen to, and I've just made it a public feed. So
sort of an archive of interesting public content.
And who knows, maybe if we get enough donations, which you all also see on the front page, and we turn this into a business one day, then maybe I'll consider doing an actual show and a daily show. But for right now, you get this quality, exciting content.
A fireside chat with Dear Leader.
Oh, yes.
He actually has a fireplace now.
Yeah. That would
be. Why haven't we done the photos?
Oh, my God, yes.
That would be brilliant. In a smoking jacket and driving slippers.
Mittens or whichever one we kept on his lap.
Yeah. That is mittens.
We've
got
to get him one of those gigantic cigars, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Oktoberfest
George
one.
Burns cigar.
Yeah.
Can we get it from like a novelty shop so that it actually looks like a big black pig?
I might actually. Thank you.
No worries.
You made Harry feel awkward.
He giggled.
Yeah.
That's why your Harry's here. He's our racist insurance.
Can I just say that your name's Harry while we're talking about big black dicks, and that also tickles me?
His last name's Price. There's probably a prostitution joke in there.
Probably.
You can also find Raw Audio Politics, which is a service of We Are Libertarians, where, again, there's all these speeches, and I don't have time to sit in front of a computer and watch Marco Rubio and Rand Paul's speech. And so when I'm in the car, I want to listen to those speeches. I want to listen to Ted Cruz's announcements. I want to listen to some of these interesting interviews. And so we're putting them up as a podcast, and I'm hoping that most of it is, you know what, screw intellectual property. No. But
yeah,
no, most of it is
IP.
But it is all public domain audio, so you can check it out. You can listen to that kind of stuff. So I just figured if I'm interested in it, then maybe other people will be as well. So you can get all four of the We Are Libertarians podcast, and you also can get another podcast. What podcast would you recommend, Harry Price?
Well, I recommend everyone tune into the Cyberloafing.Ninja podcast.
All right.
That's my personal podcast. You can find us on iTunes. We talk about different tech news. We also talk about different weird stuff. I'm a huge nerd, so I will bring it directly into like different nerd and hacker culture. Last episode, I went to a local makerspace, which was an incredible lot of fun. I'm really interested in – I like going to the different places because I sit around on Saturdays just trying to learn how to do different things just because it's like, hey, I don't know how to do this. Let me figure out how to do this. So I went to Club Siberia here locally here in Indianapolis to check out a local makerspace.
Nice. So, yeah, that is Cyber Loafing. Spell that for the people just so they know how to spell.
Cyber Loafing, it's a C-Y-B-E-R. Loafing. Sometimes you'll find us in different places because somebody actually got the cyberloafing.com address. So, but it's okay. I picked up cyberloafing.com, but I did the little leet with the E in cyberloafing, so I put so I used a 3 instead of E.
Nice.
Little leet speak in there.
All right, very good. So check out that podcast. And if you go to, we have that up on wal-radio.com. We have a whole bunch of friends of podcasts. And please, 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 please go to iTunes, rate and review, 5 stars, very positive, any podcast you listen to, not just this one, not just Cyberloafing. If you rate and review a podcast, it affects positively the iTunes algorithm. And will move us up in the rankings. And our goal by the end of the year is to be in the top 100 of the news and politics podcasts. As we go into 2016, people will hear libertarians talking about the news. So not just Tom Woods. I saw Scott Horton was in there today. So that's great. And I think we should be there too. So check that out, please. All right. On to the show notes. Yesterday was the most charitable day of the calendar here in America.
Oh, this is great.
It is the day when you wake up and you just go, I get to send $1,500 to the state and federal government today. And I just was so happy all day long. It is April 16th, and yesterday was April 15th, which means that it's tax
Patriot
Day.
Day.
Patriot
yeah.
Day.
Yeah.
And tax freedom.
Civic duty.
I think... Tax Freedom Day is coming up later. It's like around the 20th or something. And that is the day, Tax Freedom Day. You can look it up on Wikipedia. It is the day when you start working to earn your own money.
Except at the state and local level.
Right. Yeah. Then it's like
then
May.
Part of that goes towards your sales tax and your various...
Right.
Yeah.
So you work for free.
Got a church.
You work for the federal government until around April 20th every year. And it just keeps moving back and back and back because of our policies. So let's talk a little bit about the history of U.S. taxation. Things like income tax, the Federal Reserve, you know, Austrian versus Neo-Keynesian economics... Let's start with the history of U.S. taxation. And for that, we go to our correspondent on the ground, Mr. Greg Lenz.
So here I am at the actual Tea Party in Boston Harbor.
Right.
Oh, I'm Brian. I'm not Brian Williams.
We're all patrons.
I forgot I was.
Taxation.
Thank you, Chris. I am Brian Williams here. It's an exciting scene. As well.
Now, I just wanted to sort of briefly talk about it. We're sort of a country founded on no taxation without representation.
Right.
Yes.
That would have been the chant you would have heard going around. Mm-hmm. But then we've had a slow and gradual regression into accepting centralized and federalized appropriated taxation with the 16th Amendment and the income tax. And, we're only going to take, 1% on people that make over at the time,
$1,500,
then $45,000, and slowly and slowly and slowly until you get to the point where 1950s under Eisenhower, it's top tax bracket of 91%. And that's pretty devastating considering, I think it started too at like $60,000? Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't very high.
Right.
And you hit 91%. So anything over that, you kept 9% of. That's that's salty.
You yes. kept 9%?
Only kept 9%.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So then we had Kennedy come along, and he didn't actually live long enough, unfortunately, to get to implement the reforms. But he said, we are no longer at war. We have won World War II. It is time to let people start keeping the money. We don't need the additional funds. And it was very odd for – you would never hear a Democrat say that today.
Oh, yeah. No.
And so we had a series of reforms that reduced the tax burden down to – I think it was like 50% or 52% on the top, anything over that same tax rate. And then slowly but surely had bracket creep due to inflation through the 70s and 80s, and then Reagan came in and flattened the tax code and eliminated a bunch of deductions. But I find it funny that here in the U.S., we talk about April 15th being tax day and then Tax Freedom Day, and it doesn't even – like the calculations don't even come close to being what the actual taxes are. It's unimaginable to me that no one factors in sales tax, gas tax,
right?
Property tax,
right? Exactly.
All these things, and that sort of ties
into.
They
go into so many different caveats within the government system. So, like, your local tax doesn't go towards federal tax. Your sales tax don't go towards federal tax. I mean, because you're taxed out the wazoo.
On everything.
Right, mm-hmm. on everything. They're not all going to the same place. But, yeah, I mean, your roads, your construction,
your
everything.
Public school you send your kids to.
Right.
You know,
or
and
you
your neighbor's
your
kids
too.
Right. Yeah. But what I was driving at was not so much, you know, the things that our taxes are supposed to cover so much as the individual taxes that we have levied against us just by right of birth, by being born American.
And dying.
Yes.
Sure, death, absolutely.
You died, you're taxed.
Yeah.
Yes. There's no avoiding
inheritance
it.
Tax because yep. somebody's got to take your shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, your kids didn't earn that.
And it was taxed when you got it.
Yep. Yeah.
And now it's taxed when you pass it on.
There is literally no avoiding taxation in any element of your life unless you use Bitcoin. And
exactly.
then you're a criminal, and should you get caught, you're going to jail for quite a long time.
So I'm trying to convince my boss to pay me in Bitcoins. He said, we do more sales in Bitcoins, I can get paid in Bitcoins.
I wouldn't do that because it keeps going down right now.
Just
dropped to
212.
I
don't
care. It's not stable.
I don't care.
You're going to care when you get paid. And what you were supposed to get paid drops
it's
in half.
It's the principle, Gregory.
The principle.
Yeah.
It's the principle.
I like.
I will gladly take half my pay so the government doesn't get their 12.5%. Yeah.
They take so much out of my chicken.
You don't
taxes.
Know what tax bracket he's at.
No, I don't. He could be. But I mean, the top rate. One's 39.6, so it's
yeah.
still better than dropping in
if
half.
If you're at a good tax bracket, Harry, if you go to WeLibertarians.com, you can. There's a PayPal link right on there.
We'll accept bitcoins too, so you can let your boss pay you however.
Actually, we don't because I don't know how any
what?
Of it works.
We got a message
what?
Today on how to set it up.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'll check that out.
All right,
I totally accept Bitcoin, but I know nothing about it.
Can I interrupt us really quick and tell a kind of funny anecdote regarding
that's why you're
tax
here, Gina.
Okay. So yesterday was tax day, as Spangle said. In addition, and this is all very important, so make sure you pay attention, it was also the Scholastic Book Fair at Vinny's school.
Oh, my God. That
oh
was my
God.
Favorite day of the year.
I know.
Oh, my God.
So he's looking forward to it all week. He's got his little catalog of all the books that are coming. He knows exactly which one he wants. He knows how much it costs. He's ready. And he says, you know, Mommy, it's $6.99, so I need $7 plus taxes. Okay. So we give him a $10 bill and tell him we expect the change. Well, last year, the books that he wanted were very popular. So by the time his class got there, those books were gone.
I hated that.
Right. Oh, yeah. So I took
Socialism.
Him in early. Yeah. They have this event where if you have a parent that can take you in early, you can go for Bunny's Books and Bagels. Right?
Bunnies, and
so,
books,
I know,
and bagels.
I know. You got a free bagel for taking your kid in to get a book. It was.
What about where's the bunny coming?
Yeah, do
this?
You get a free bunny?
Because it's always near Easter time.
Oh, okay, cool.
So,
it's weird branding.
Yeah. Well,
unless there's a rabbit there.
I'm not commenting because my kid
he's
goes
back.
To school.
Come
there.
Get a book.
So anyway, my kid goes. I take my kid in the morning so he can get this particular book that he wants. He picks up the book. He goes up. He pays the lady. He gives her his money. He says, "I need $2 back." And she says, "Well, it'll actually be." You know, $1.53 because of the tax or whatever it was. And he was like, oh, taxes. And so they both got a chuckle out of it. Well, I let him keep his change. He went to school. And then when it came time for his class to visit as a classroom, he had his change left. He found an ink pen that he wanted. He buys the ink pen. He gives her his money. And she says, you know, he's expecting it to be like $1.20, and it's like $1.40. And he says, but I paid my taxes this morning. So what's going on? Right? So he comes home and he's like, Mommy, it was tax day today. I was like, I know. You know, we heard it on the radio on the way to school, and I'm sure you've heard radio commercials on your way home. He said, yeah. He said, I didn't know that meant you had to pay your taxes twice. He said, I was supposed to bring you change. And he puts down a dime and 4 pennies. But it's not my fault. That bitch charged me taxes twice.
Did he
I
say the B word?
I don't think he did.
That would have been unbelievable.
It was implied. He was not happy.
Be.
Yeah, he was not happy he had to pay his taxes twice on tax day.
But see, the state turns Vinny against this lady. It's not her fault. She's just acting as an agent of the state collecting the taxes.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was
a woman following orders.
She's
yeah, because
just,
men
she's,
don't do that.
He didn't mean it that way. He meant
no, I meant it
he
like
was trying
the
Nazis. To be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know they always say men following. They were just men following orders.
Right, right.
All you social justice warriors.
Well, that's because that's where I was going next with that. Yeah, men don't do that.
Oh no, men are much worse.
They're the ordering.
Orders. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, intelligent people make men that follow orders think that they are coming up with their own initiatives.
You just hurt my brain.
Good.
Don't quite
continue
fun when you
speaking
people.
Now, Spangle. Do whatever you want.
All right, so let's cover the Federal Reserve because we've got, you know, as we go into tax day, obviously it's easy to pick on taxes, and this is where a lot of conservatives, they just don't see the error in their ways, and libertarians, especially Austrian economists.
Economists.
Hip-hop anonymous?
So there's these economonopolists, and they go out there, and they inflate
money.
Our money.
Did Lindsey Graham just join the podcast?
I think so. Yeah.
Wow.
But he did say this yesterday that he is seriously considering and will probably run for president.
Exciting.
Well, there we go. All right, we needed the neocon in the race. We just got it.
Yeah.
That yawn came at the exact perfect time. So tell us a little bit about the Federal Reserve and what it does, Gregory.
So the Federal Reserve was created as basically to create a network of national level banks in response to
Great Depression.
Prior to 1913.
It was created before the Great Depression.
And it was actually the reason it was created, this isn't the primary reason, but the reason was that humans had decided we could perfect the business cycle. We decided that we were so smart, we were so incredibly competent, and there are so many individuals available that are able to anticipate and in real time react and change monetary policy in the United States that we could smooth out the boom and bust of the business cycle because we had a, I believe, it's, what is it, the crisis of, it was under Harding, 1912, 1911, and it was a V-shaped recovery, and he did nothing.
Yes.
And so we decided that that's terrible. There was still a depression, but it was a sharp recovery under a year. And so we need this institution. And we need an institution where the national banks will be chartered. They're part of a network. We'll offer them in exchange for joining this network. We'll offer them a 6% annual dividend when they purchase share or get shares within this network. And then on top of that, we'll lend them money at cheaper rates than the natural rate of interest through the discount window. So a bank can go to the Federal Reserve and borrow. All this was done because man believed he could control the economy.
And for a time, it did work. That's what led to the Roaring Twenties.
Yeah, they could create booms and busts, and they could create huge booms. And so the Federal Reserve, and this the reason why this is important is because taxation gets harped on all the time. Like, you know, our taxes are too high, blah, 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 blah. Inflation is the hidden tax.
There's the monster.
It is. And for the government, inflation's a beautiful thing because all that money they borrowed in order to run deficits now, they can pay back with cheaper dollars.
Right.
To the point they can inflate it away. And so they don't really even need to raise taxes. They can just inflate it away and you get bracket creep like we did under Nixon. And so it's really important to understand historically because a lot of people glorify Reagan, especially if you watch Republican candidates, you'd think he was the closest thing to Jesus Christ.
Right.
They're no longer Lincoln Day dinners in most places. They're now Lincoln Reagan Day dinners.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it had gone that deep yet.
Yeah.
Reagan has, you know, he has become bigger than Lincoln in the Republican Party of modern. When was the last time you heard someone in reference just like Lincoln, you know, in a speech?
I mean, generally you hear Democrats reference Lincoln.
Way more so than Republicans.
Right.
Well, what Democrat can they bring up from the past?
Strom Thurmond.
Andrew Jackson, if you get over the tail of tears part, you know, you get over that, you know. He did
you
go out.
I have actually hung out with more.
Did he just trigger you? You just
triggered
Harry.
Over here.
You just triggered him. That is not cool, man.
Andrew Jackson did
check
take down a central bank.
I've actually hung out with more libertarians that get a hard on for Andrew Jackson than Democrats.
Like against him or for him?
For him.
Pro him.
For him.
What?
There's yes, there's a bunch of...
Oh, yeah, because he went after the central bank and...
You just got to get over the racism and the trail of tears.
And the basic
and the
genocide.
And the just not doing what Congress says.
And the,
or this... Or
well,
being
I mean, he was a maverick.
Or the Supreme Court.
He wore And he wore holstered live pistols when he was being censured into the House of Representatives and was ready to pull the trigger at any moment. The guy was awesome.
He was insane. And the whole reason that he
Man, I got to get my lifetime permit. You keep reminding me.
Yeah.
The reason that he killed off the central bank is not because he had some policy belief. It was because he had a personal vendetta with the head of the bank.
Right.
I mean, the guy was just a loon. He was a lunatic.
He's everything that Sarah Palin wanted to be when people called a rogue. Yeah. I mean, this is a guy that Monroe was having an issue. We were having an issue with the Creek Indians in Florida and Georgia. James Monroe wrote a letter as coverage saying, out of the blue, you absolutely cannot go to northern Florida and handle this issue we're having with the Creek Indians. He writes back, you're understood. Goes down there after just having been shot before in battle, rides down there, and he sent him down there because a British citizen had been, like, killed, and he eliminates it with a militia of, like, 16.
Yeah.
The Creek Indians flee, and we basically get Florida.
Yeah.
Suddenly we own Florida.
And he's awesome. I mean, well, he's not awesome, but he is that great mythical figure in American history.
Then to start the Jacksonian period.
Yep. He was really the first president that was from the backwoods, the territories, before that it had all been
He's the quintessential pulling yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah,
right.
The American creation myth,
He was definitely, I mean, the guys before, they had been born in the colonies, but they were the
elite.
The elite, the intellectual elite, and he was just, a backwoodsman from Tennessee and...
And he could do both. He was amazing in that he could be the backwoodsman, good old boy, and then he could be stately and diplomatic and charm the pants off
to an extent. So. I wouldn't say that he was our greatest diplomatic president by any stretch.
Oh, no, but he just had that ability to flirt, to be both. Or, he had to, he'd never been elected.
He could wear both hats.
He's definitely someone from American history that I'd like to meet.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand him, and I want to understand him.
As
long as I'm heavily armed, too, I'd meet him.
There's actually an off-Broadway play you might like.
Okay.
It's called Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
Okay.
It's interesting.
It's
tame. Actually really interesting.
So before we move on from the Federal Reserve, what else are we missing here?
Oh, missed is the inflation,
right.
As the hidden tax. And that was actually, so this is modern. So supply-side economics, the way this matters is that the idea was, we had 17, 18, 19% interest rates in the late 70s going into 81. Inflation was killing people because people that were not making a whole lot of money were going up, just gradually moving up the tax brackets, and they couldn't even afford to make their mortgage payment. It was absolute devastation. And so a guy comes along named Art Laffer. And then at the time, his predecessor was Robert Mundell. And the idea was that supply-side economics isn't just tax cuts. It's not just, hey, if we cut all taxes, all of a sudden this miracle of this engine of economic growth is going to arrive. The idea was if we can tame inflation, we will get people that are putting their money right now into gold, into non-productive assets that are just riding the inflation wave because the prices are going up. We can get them to invest in equipment, plants, make real productivity and lifestyle gains. And this was the only innovative idea out there at the time within the National Bureau of Economic Research and the Council of Economic Advisors. And Laffer was not part of the establishment or elite. He was from like Southern California. He wasn't didn't have a Krugman or a Hank Paulson background of Wall Street. So they bring him in, and then his idea is this: listen, we need more productivity. How do you get productivity? We're going to cut marginal tax rates. So the more you work, the more you keep. It wasn't the focus of now you just have more money, because if you do it that way, then it just sounds like you want rich to get richer. So they wanted people, the more they would work, the harder the Americans would work, the more they would keep of that next dollar. In addition to, they're not going to lose the worth of that dollar, which is inflation. So there wouldn't be this instinct to spend on frivolous things, because inflation causes people to spend rather than save. So what they did is by encouraging people to work harder, the productivity gains soared. We starved inflation out with Paul Volcker by raising interest rates, creating a sharp recession. And all of a sudden, you had all these Fortune 500 corporations investing in new plants and equipment rather than like when Coke started buying vineyards that were wines that were never going to be made again just so they could ride the inflation wave. And all of a sudden, you had what appeared to be an economic renaissance in the United States. Now, the downside to that, and this is something, this is why I shared this article today in our secret group, is that a strong dollar is really, really bad in the long run for people that are in labor-intensive jobs. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you make the dollar more valuable in relation to other countries, the less people are the less you're going to have manufacturing jobs here because it becomes too expensive.
Yes.
And so Ben Bernanke, part of his reason for during the 2007 crisis, one, he thought that the reason the Great Depression it was extended so long is that we kept the money supply way too short, or we kept tightened it way too much, and we needed to expand it. And so, but one of the byproducts of that is making our exports way more affordable in relation to other countries that are producers. And so that brought back the American labor-intensive manufacturing sector. But within the last month, that if this trend continues, you're going to see factories here become so expensive and prohibitive for Fortune 500 corporations. They are either going to automate and invest in new, you know, new technologies where it's less labor intensive, or they're going to outsource again.
Exactly. Commodity prices have dropped since January. I work for a e-scrap company, and we are holding back steel and aluminum because commodity prices have dropped. We have even started to pick up other e-scrap facilities for the simple fact that they didn't make it. Because they put all their effort in that. All that hard labor of tearing things down and scrapping it. So from that simple fact, like, but even outside of my work, we're realizing, like, we have to get things automated. We have a workforce that would tear things down for us because it was cheaper just to pay these guys to tear computers down. But we're seeing that trend. We just bought our first shredder. It's huge, does the work of 10 guys. So instead of hiring,
and it makes sense.
So instead of hiring 10 guys, we bought the shredder.
And so you saw it too. This trend has happened before in history. And it's no coincidence that when Paul Volcker raised the federal funds rate up to the 18-19% and created a strong dollar, that coincided with the mid-1980s, 1990s trend of outsourcing of Fortune 500 corporations. Mm-hmm. Combine that with trade deals.
Yep.
Allowing, you know, with NAFTA. And now we have a new one with the Trans-Pacific Partnership that's right now on the verge of being passed and agreed to.
Quickly.
You are going to see the 2010s, or the aughts, is that what they're...
I guess that's what we call it, yeah.
Yeah, the aughts are going to be the resurgence of the outsource of the global multinationals. And they're going to move it because of the strong dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also a signal of economic instability. People flood into strong currencies or strong governments that control their own currencies. So, like, mm-hmm. in the European Union, money doesn't flood in there because no country actually singularly controls their currency. So what happened in Europe after the 2007 crisis was the Swiss franc skyrocketed to the point where a Big Mac was $14. That's pretty incredible. They had to actually institute capital controls to keep money from flooding out of their economy. And so if you see that in the United States, that means to me that, one, there's a huge demand for dollars because all oil trade is conducted in U.S. dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you are going to see news stories start to happen. Hell, it may have just started Walmart. They shut down 5 stores because of plumbing issues. It was just announced. 2,000 workers.
Plumbing issues.
Plumbing issues. Unidentified plumbing issues. No further investigation. Now, I don't know. Maybe those reopen. But if this trend continues, automation and the lack of hiring is the other stagnation. Mm-hmm. And then you get social unrest.
Well, yeah. Honestly, as a society, we might be better off with some of those major corporations going in that direction. As I understand it, Walmart's one where something like 70% of their employees also receive government assistance for everything.
They absolutely do.
Yeah, but if they're shutting down stores, then 100% of those employees are getting government assistance, and they're not going to have that income supplanting them.
Yeah, I totally understand. Any loss is a loss, don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying is we're as a society, we're right now, even though they're unemployed or they are employed, we're still footing the bill for their medical and in some cases, their TANF and food stamps and mm-hmm. things of that nature.
And all the indirect that go, you know, corporate giving towards charities for, you know, non-governmental income assistance through food bank, private food bank, those sure. types of things.
Yeah.
The real danger, though, and this is what's always been different in this last century prior to the 2000s, is that productivity gains, so people willing to work 60 hours instead of 40 hours, or people having a more skilled workforce and able to produce more goods with the same amount of effort, have always marched in tandem, or maybe a slight lagging in the wages. There have been gains, so people made more money as they increased their skill set. We've seen a total decoupling of productivity gains and wage gains. Wages have stayed the same, productivity's increased over the last 10 years. So now it's that go to school, learn a new trade, or go to a community college since you're unemployed and you get to, we'll pay for it, and you go learn to do X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm. So that you can come back and make the exact same amount.
Exactly.
Which is exactly this what
exactly.
this is.
Or we're going to lay off 25% and just have the 75% pick up the rest.
Yes.
Because what happens is as it becomes... The problem with corporate taxation and business taxation, it's taxing us twice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you go to Walmart and you buy something, and Walmart is paying business taxes, they're just rolling into the prices of their goods those taxes. And so you are actually carrying the taxation burden. And if we opened up corporate taxation and didn't have business taxes, then they probably would pay their workers more money.
They'd be capable. Whether or not they would decide to is...
And
that's an element of supply of labor.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so what the problem with corporate taxation is, it's threefold in the way that you will retain your... how you make profit, essentially. You can not give money back to your investors and your shareholders, and then your stock price tanks and you don't get more capital to increase, so that's not an option. The second is, to increase the price of goods, which you can't
hurts
do that.
The consumer.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. Then Walmart loses what makes them special. I can't stand right. Walmart, but I'll go to Walmart because they have prices that I can't get at Target or Meijer.
Yes,
I'll only go to Walmart if it's after 11 o'clock.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in my house coat, really not feeling people anyway.
And so Walmart loses what makes them special if they start raising prices. Right. And any you can price yourself out of competition. This goes for any industry. We're just using Walmart as a for instance. And so the third is you'd start making up your profit by cutting labor costs. You pay people less. You lay people off.
Automate.
You give them less benefits. Mm-hmm. You start automating. And so corporate taxation is actually a huge contributor to why our unemployment rate, it sucks. I mean, because and why? If you're working in a job, you're not getting paid what you should, and you're doing more, and the threat of layoffs are real.
Exactly. Yeah. Even at my job, I employ a lot of highly skilled technicians, but I'm constantly sitting there trying to figure out a way to not use them, use more automated, have my server do more of the work, and. I like having them. I like having these highly skilled people there. But if they don't think and give me what I need from them, then I will just replace them with someone that doesn't know as much and have the computer do the thinking for them.
The efficiency gains.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the productivity and where lifestyle comes from. The thing is, though, the other thing about this era, these last 10 years, it's very odd, are there haven't been productivity gains. Have you noticed? Have you aware of that? Like mm-hmm. so, like the IT revolution, the mm-hmm. computer technology revolution, 70s, 80s, huge gains in productivity.
Yes,
completely flat. Hmm. Last 10 years,
social media.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah.
Well, I was going to say the same thing.
Well, that here's the thesis of kind of a cutting edge thinker right now is that the amount of time that has to be dedicated to technical support and information technology support,
yeah.
and how to implement it, has dominated. And replaced productivity gains.
Okay.
Yeah.
As that makes troubleshooting as someone has replaced or it has caught up.
Well,
with
you've got a 45-year-old. You know, I think about my mom and my dad. My mom and dad are in their mid-50s. Never have used computers. Really don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at work, I'm the guy that explains computers to everybody that I work with. You know, and so there is a portion of yes, me. Thank you.
And his eight gigabit Wi-Fi.
Just yeah. because I'm not as nerdy as you are, it doesn't mean
exactly.
that I don't
exactly. That's
know.
What yeah. I run into. Like, I'm computer proficient. I'm computer
right.
literate, but I'm not computer nerd or whatever. Neo. We're going to call Harry. Yeah, I'm not like...
Well, I understand the technology, and so I'm the go-to guy. So there's a portion of my day that's carved out just for helping everybody else understand just the basic computing stuff.
See, I have to support two people at my job like that, because everyone else is either like a tech or they don't have a computer.
Right.
Which is nice to have, because it's just
those are the security guards.
Right. Yeah.
These are just two. They have a security threat like that. But to everyone out there that does like either computer security or network security, we need those Russian hackers. We need those Chinese hackers. If it wasn't for those hackers, ITSec and OPSec people wouldn't have a job.
Yeah, you'd be obsoleted real quick if we didn't have enemies, essentially.
Right. You know, like...
Speaking of Chinese hackers, did you guys read that WikiLeaks has a searchable database of all the Sony emails?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Go ahead, though, Harry. I got to hear it.
What? You were
going on about how you needed the hackers from outside.
Yeah, we need those different hackers to basically give us a reason. Like, I used to, when I first started to working for that company, I did all their network stuff. Now I'm in charge of the production department. I do most of the stuff to get things produced through the department. So I don't have time for that. But so I employ all kinds of different network security people to come out to do different things for our network, just because there's Chinese and Russian hackers playing with our network.
Koreans?
Yeah. Koreans or whatever.
Domestic.
And there's different hacks that, like, I thought I was up to things, like different hacks and stuff that are coming after. Like the freaking SIP scanners, I didn't even know that was a thing that people were going after people's SIP PBXs. I'm kind of glad I don't host mine locally, or they would have apparently I would have had my SIP PBX taken control of.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Don't explain it. That's
important because
that
perfectly demonstrates
our level of literacy within the room, even.
And, well, it demonstrates the labor market. So Harry's one of a very small amount that they command where the IT wages are for network security are experiencing a rapid expansion in wage growth. And
sure. Yes.
General labor is plummeting. If it weren't for minimum wages, I would bet you'd see a minimum wage for just non-fast food worker. I think you'd see somewhere between $3.50 and maybe $2.75.
Well,
an
you
hour.
Can,
with, and that would be slavery.
With some of the
that
network,
would be like despicable.
With some of the network certifications that I have, most of them won't work for under $25 an hour.
Like, why would they? They can go
right.
Get a competing offer for way more.
Yeah, exactly. Like. My boss, when he started looking at all the certifications I had, he gave me like raises so I would stay where I was. Because if he didn't, I would leave.
Right. And so this is, there's actually, Carl Sagan wrote a book, and I heard it. Tim Ferriss has a great podcast. Look for the Tim Ferriss Show and Kevin Rose with Foundation. Two great podcasts where they interview, you know, thinkers about the future. And you know, a couple things. He had Glenn Beck on, and Glenn Beck talked about one of the seminal books in his life was a Carl Sagan book where he talked about the gatekeepers eventually, and Sagan wrote this in the 70s, eventually gatekeepers will exist in information technology. And we're kind of already there because Harry can own us if he wants.
Technologically.
Yeah. The other thing that I, you know, I hear a lot about.
You can't even rent or borrow me.
She's off the grid.
You're right.
So
no one is off the grid.
The other thing that
no one is off the grid. Right there.
No one is off the grid. If you
go
are inside the continental United States, guess what? You're on the grid.
Yeah. The other thing is,
I don't know. There's some hermits out there that are pretty damn close
on the grid.
Not necessarily.
There's only a few places in the United States that aren't mapped, and they're being mapped as the forestry.
As far as the Google car can go,
as the United States government starts using drones to inventory trees.
That's so fucked up.
You're on.
Why do you hate trees?
Why are you anti-tree, Gina?
Yeah,
I am not a tree racist. I embrace all.
She's an arbor racist.
Right, I embrace all breeds of tree.
So the other concept that Jason Calcanis and Kevin Rose and some of these other people who have, you know, these tech podcasts discuss is something called Moore's Law and the Singularity. So Ray Kurzweil is a guy who has written a book that is called The Singularity is Near. And there's something called Moore's Law, where every 18 months, technology doubles. And so by 2020-ish, your average... I have a $1,000 computer sitting in front of me.
Okay. No, it's not.
Yeah, I was going to say, why?
It's an Apple.
Shut up.
It's a $1,000 Apple logo on the side of it.
Take your cheap
It's got as much power as my Lenovo ThinkPad right here.
Take your cheap piece of plastic and get out. Do you watch the Chicks on the Right video stream on that? Is that what you do? Use that for?
No.
I just vomited in my mouth a little.
He listens to the show.
You're going to need a new printer.
Mittens.
Yeah, I like listening to them. They're funny.
What?
Yeah, they're funny.
How much should they pay you to say that?
Yeah.
First funny. Of all, what I, so, how I make my money so is my own business.
Your taste is not...
Questionable
is
at a
not,
minimum.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something about Harry. Harry's one of those rare Subaru Outback driving Republicans.
I have a Subaru Legacy. Thank you.
Oh, my.
All right, so back to me, everybody.
Hold on. I will say this. Because I'm going to use the bathroom. I also believe George Clooney was the best Batman.
What? Get out of my sight. I wish to hear from you no more.
I don't even know who you are.
Yeah, no.
I don't know.
Danny Ocean as Batman.
I don't even...
You
I'm
invited
so
him.
I'm so disappointed in you. It's just not even funny.
I like George Clooney.
I just...
I do, nothing against George Clooney, but no. But no. Adam West was a better Batman than George fucking Clooney. We're not even going there.
Go to the bathroom and think about what you've done.
Yep.
Affirmative.
Stop it.
You're so dirty.
All right. So, anyways.
The last 10 years, the singularity.
Your average $1,000 computer in 2020 is going to have the artificial intelligence, the intelligence and processing power of your average human brain.
Gross.
And by 2040-ish. The $1,000 computer will have the computing and processing power of all of the brains on the planet.
Terrifying.
All of humankind.
Terrifying.
That's why people like Elon Musk and others are coming out and saying, hey, we need to watch this whole technology thing. And so a lot of people in the tech industry are saying that once we get to this processing power in the tech world, it's like, hey, we're going to have 50% unemployment. We need to deal with that because there's going to be a lot of that.
That's typically bad for democracy and individual rights and that type of thing. So to give you a concrete example, that phone right there.
Right.
What model is that?
Oh, fuck if I know. It's a Windows phone.
Oh, Nokia. It's a Windows phone then.
Yeah.
Right. So then it's a non-iPhone or Android phone that's out there. So the original servers that hosted the first Google algorithm and the web crawler.
Right.
That is 100 times more. Computing power. That phone.
The average cell phone today has more capability than what NASA had when we sent the first mission to the moon.
And last.
That's true.
So the thing is, though, and the danger is, like you said, is what if, though, productivity gains are being hampered by our ability to use technology and find it as a utility, except for the select few, obviously, who can understand it like Harry. Our belief has always been the more productive we are, wages will follow for the worker. Lifestyle improves because productivity gains are lifestyle gains. What if we get to the point, and what is this? What sort of political system is this when work is an assignment, a job is an identity assignment, and not a necessity for the functioning of the economy because our lifestyle and productivity gains have been so substantial that it isn't necessarily to work. It is it's a psychological attachment and not a necessity for a functioning economy.
A trophy.
Yeah, everybody gets to play.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, technology starts replacing people, different things. To get more productive gains at my job, the easiest way is to get labor and get hands touching it. So the less hands touching it, the more money I make.
Yep.
I am closely working on a piece of technology that stops me from having six people.
And so that's something that is a small example of a trend that's going to be happening in time. Now, but what's killed it, though, and what's going to really make it hard to implement is the political backlash from such gains. They're going to be huge.
Yes. Yes, it is.
They're going to be absolutely enormous. That it used to be immigration. And that'll be that interim period. We can't allow immigration. Those will take jobs from great Americans. They're, you know, that'll replace us. What logically happens after that argument is artificial intelligence.
Yeah, but that's been happening forever.
Yeah.
I mean, those are like cliches. Old people are afraid of robots because they're going to take our jobs. And we can't let the immigrants in because they're going to take our jobs.
But one of the biggest cultural cultural issues in the United States has always been what you do for a living determines either one's self-worth or your place, the division of labor, your place in society.
Yeah, it's a problem within our psyche.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I would call it a problem because from my personal perspective, I don't think it's warranted. It's one of those you are not your job situations.
But those are going to compound themselves on a global scale, not just here. And so then you say, what sort of political system handles that?
Well, it'll be a wake-up for people here that really live and breathe by the, I've got X amount of dollars, therefore I fucking own you, and I decide what happens within the government, and I'm in control. Well, when China comes in and they control all of us, shut the fuck up and sit down, and don't you feel stupid for feeling that way your whole life. Because guess what? You are no longer a big fish in a small pond. You are a tiny fucking minnow in the belly of a whale.
But what sort of political system can competently handle that? Is it one where you say, for instance, what we're all working towards voluntarily?
Not the one we've currently got, which will be interesting to see how it develops. Mm.
But it's a voluntary society where there is no state element for the redistribution of funds when work isn't necessary for the growth of an economy? Or is it where the state's pure function is to provide a baseline level of you as a citizen of income so that you can participate in the economy as a consumer but not as a producer, where you're irrelevant, and so the state's only role is you already get a benefit from all the productivity gains and the artificial intelligence. You're not necessary to work.
To watch it develop. I mean, any way that it goes, it'll be interesting to watch it unfold because it will be a major shift in the paradigm of the way our society's structured.
No longer being an identifier.
We're already there. And the nature of work... Right. And I'm preparing myself by using something called lynda.com, which
is a great website.
Which we ought to bring on as an affiliate networking type thing because I love it. I get on lynda.com and you can learn about any program, any computer skill, and you just watch. You go through. They're like online courses.
That's how I picked up C.
Yeah,
it was recently acquired too
by LinkedIn. Yeah, so you know it's going to be viable and around for a while.
And we have one of those here. In Indianapolis, if you're a local. Lesson.ly.
Yeah, there's in your area, there's things like Code Academy, Code School.
Code Academy, that's where I learned Python.
Yeah, there's all kinds of online learning tools that you can use. The future of work is creative and innovative.
Yes, it is.
And to be creative and innovative, you've got to understand how to use computer skills. The idea that you are going to... The idea that you're going to go and work for a company your entire life died years ago.
Exactly.
Now we're at the point where I think working for a company won't exist. I think we're looking in a world of 1099s where if you're going to...
Free agent nation.
Yeah, you're basically a free agent and you have to have a few skills and multiple streams of income, and that requires that you work harder and you hustle. And so you're going to have to be a well-rounded person. You're going to have to know sales and management and business.
I don't see that happening. I don't see it going down that way. Because, I mean, that assumes that technology is the only forefront in the future. That assumes that information technology is the only thing that matters.
Well, somebody's always got
to... And if you honestly believe that way, you probably need to leave the house a little more. Because there are things that happen within our society that have jack shit to do with information technology. I mean, I understand that incredibly computer-minded people have a tendency to believe that computers run the entire world. And to a certain extent, computers are involved in a great deal of what involves the entire world. But I can guarantee you that if every single computer, every single one of them, went down, tomorrow would be another fucking day.
Well, that's why the threat of an EMP is a very real threat.
The realest threat.
An EMP is an electronic magnetic pulse. That it was in Ocean's 11, where the newer one, where they used it and took down the electrical systems. So...
Yeah, 13.
There's always going to be... We are in a service economy, Gina, where, you know...
quick. It's more
people
dangerous.
Are going to go out to eat. People are going right. to need sewer systems. People right. are going to want power run. I mean, there's always right. going to be a service element.
Construction people. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't computers in some fashion in all of those things. You go to a restaurant most of the time. Your server puts your order into a computer system, uh-huh. and it's routed back to the back. Not always. Because you can go sit down on a counter and look at the guy behind the counter and say, I'd like a burger, and he'll fry it up for you. That happens, too. Believe
sounds
that.
Efficient.
But I'm, but unless you're a small operation. But even at that, there's still other ways that many people make money that don't require computer technology.
I went to Johnny Rockets the other day, and Johnny Rockets has a computer at the table. It's like a little tablet thing.
Is that awesome?
And nobody took my order. I punched it into the thing. And guess what? They're not hiring waitresses. They're hiring
Did it come out right?
They're hiring food runners.
Exactly.
It came out perfectly. There was no human error involved. So,
it's amazing.
So I think what we're saying is that, yeah, you're always going to have those roles, but if you want to ensure your employability in an uncertain future, you should understand technology. You should get on things like lynda.com and broaden your horizons. And
you can't afford not to.
Yeah.
Buy your kids a Raspberry Pi. Teach them how to program. For the love of God, yeah. teach them how to program.
There's even JavaScript games out there that teach you like a
Minecraft?
Like visual, but it's for JavaScript. It's to learn JavaScript through
Minecraft.
Is that what that is?
Yes, there's a learn JavaScript and C programming through Minecraft.
Yeah, and if your kid isn't learning that right now, he desperately, unless he's able to monetize it in one of the, and that's going to be an exclusive group, and
it's
my
exclusive.
God, it's going to be the
1%. It's all competitive.
Well,
you're talking about a sector that's going to outcompete itself. It will literally, it will obliterate itself. Because once you get to the top levels, you have such a level of competition that these tech companies are going to compete themselves into oblivion.
But this is how the free market works. I mean, eventually
right.
they get destroyed and you rebuild. Yeah.
So you can be able to mm-hmm. JavaScript all you need to, but once we get to a certain point where Greg's talking about where we've we have automated ourselves out of jobs.
That's
where the hackers come in to play. They hack the crap, and then you need security people. Then you need patches.
If you want to continue in that cycle, society absolutely can go in that direction.
But if they
would like to make sure that that doesn't happen, somebody will wake up and say, this is stupid. I'm putting billions of dollars towards a particular technology, and then trillions of dollars afterwards in order to protect it, and
yes.
then even more money in addition to. And you know what? I could hire a fucking cashier back and override all of that.
And what Gene is describing right now is the
pendulum. It's a cycle.
Well, is the exact sentiment of what sort of political system is going to be capable of handling such a sentiment? Because the one as it exists right now is absolutely not possible.
Too slow.
Yeah.
Too slow.
Too slow.
But what she's identifying is that sentiment of,
you just became an anarchist.
Yay!
Why does a political system have to?
That is not capable of handling this.
Right.
Anarchy is not possible with this type of event.
What do you mean?
That would be
a collectivist breakdown in anger at the Luddites on a scale of 50% instead of 5%.
Explain the Luddite.
So the Luddites are people who wanted to prevent technology, and they wanted to prevent the gains from technological process because they saw it as inhumane and a...
They solved the future that you just predicted.
Yeah, they. I mean, it's the human existence, or maybe not the human existence, but for most, what you do for a living or what you do is attached to your identity and your self-worth.
I hate that.
Right. But that is the bane of what we deal with. And so when this happens,
it's a tenet of our society.
In the event that artificial intelligence does replace on a majority scale instead of a minority scale, what sort of political system can keep things civil, keep social unrest to a minimum, unless there is an element of redistribution, which has been through society forever? When the rich get rich,
okay,
there's always a leveling element.
In the tech world, voluntary societies come together to program something, to build something.
Open source it.
Right. Open source technology. The Linux code is backed up because it's open source. Everyone has the Linux source code. Even when the...
the internet was starting to form off, the United States government just decided, like, we're going to sit here and make rules on how that was. Well, too bad the IEEE got together and did it faster, got it out, and then the United States government was like, well, this is how
it is.
Well, that doesn't work.
When the government, or when the internet first started?
Yeah, DARPA.
When the internet first started, there were very few.
Well, in the 80s, when it really started,
when it became more common for personal use in homes.
No, before that, when it was trying, when it just mostly just universities talking to each other.
Right, the United States government
was trying to go through and try to develop different protocols and how everything was communicated and how things were troubleshooted.
Well, they had our military secrets on many of the databases.
And there was all kinds of different networking protocols that was going out through that was very proprietary that no one else had. Apple Talk, IPX, all these other different crap. So basically the IE got together and helped develop TCP/IP.
The reason it developed like that.
I love TCBY. Great froyo. Great froyo.
You've always loved their peanut butter.
If the thing is, the reason TCBIU didn't even exist and why you don't have mesh networking, networking requires such computing power that our processors couldn't handle that. So mesh networking is going to happen now that our processors are getting faster.
I consider myself a low-level juggalo. I listen to ICP all the time.
Now, the point Harry's trying to make is that the hacker community created it as a bottom-up process in the internet creation process rather than top-down because the project managers, they're military trained.
Yes.
Top-down, they didn't have the technical skills
capable of competing with what was
going on. So the people that were doing the workers created it as a bottom-up process and didn't follow orders.
Right. Most of the hackers were watching the FCC do this. They're like, we're going to take control of the internet. Are you now?
Yeah, good luck. I mean, it's been unleashed and you can't contain it. And the other thing about coding, I mean, coding really is, and that's why I'm an advocate of teaching coding along with, you know, if we're going to have government schools, let's have...
That should be a foreign language.
Math, get rid of cursive.
No, math, English.
I think cursive needs to stay. Yeah.
Get rid of cursive.
I think cursive.
Start teaching Python.
But this is the problem, that we're arguing over whether or not cursive should exist in our General Assembly right now, and there's no discussion of teaching coding. Along with the human science, along with science and math and English, coding, the very nature of it is... We have a problem. How can we fix it? There's a problem. How can we fix it? And it is a functional way of solving human problems. That is what coding is. So the internet, the existence of technology, is all about making the world a better place, as Silicon Valley likes to.
Wait, what? The internet is all about making the world a better place.
The actual end result is actually a gutter of awful humanity,
okay.
Like Twitter and
that's the dark web,
whoa. Right?
Whoa.
But
this is good sight on the dark web.
But yeah? the point some of bad ones technology too. Is.
Faces of death. It's the downfall of society.
It is a free market.
I do love Arshav's Gore.
Solutions to problems, where the spirit of government is: we've got a problem, let's solve it, but not functionally.
Now, then this conversation has taken a turn where we're not actually getting to where I'm talking about.
Yeah, we're way off economics.
Of course,
not that. No.
Well, let's give him the floor so we can wrap up because we're at 2 hours.
Yeah, this is economics. So I'm actually talking about the point where artificial intelligence replaces coders. So we're beyond where the people that write code.
So you have obsoleted.
Are obsolete as well.
Okay.
Everyone is obsolete because creativity. Because
it's just bound to happen.
Because that's the difference between technology is it's not capable. It's capable of you put in the problem you're having and computing an answer. What happens when it's capable of asking the question?
There you go.
Then the political system has to change. And that.
Either that or the manner in which society operates has to shift.
Oh, absolutely, because then you're talking about people stay at home.
Really?
And if...
Oh, my God.
And the cultural shifts from an identity derived from work becomes to, well, we don't really necessarily have to work because our system is automated. We have limitless energy, food, all these systems of distribution are
mapped. And then whoever oversees it in order to verify that it's happening.
That's where the concentration of power is.
Right.
And so then it becomes not only an element of how concentrated can power be before there is such a prohibitive danger to it that it is...
Oh, we're past that.
Well, that power is democratized in the name of limiting technology, which is the danger of the singularity. Because if it does get to that point, who's saying you could even stop it?
You can't. And people who don't know anything about it are pushing for it. Let's raise the minimum wage up. Great. You must love robots.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, the minimum wage has been stagnant for a while. People on both sides of the aisle.
Oh, it has. No
doubt.
Yeah,
yeah. I push for it, too. I should think it should be $20 an hour. It's going to be awesome.
I don't know about $20 an hour.
The problem with that is that you have Spangle going to Johnny Rockets and ordering off a computer.
I completely understand that.
I like pre-ordering on my phone app and then just show up and I get food. I love that.
We're not unsympathetic to what you're saying and the plight of your unskilled worker. Let's put it that way. Sure. I mean, my dad ran a janitorial company, for God's sake. I spent my entire life up until the job I'm at now working for him doing construction cleanup for $7 an hour. And I was his son, so I got paid really well. You know, compared to everybody else. So,
are you kidding? If you were my kid, you'd be getting allowance.
I mean, gifted. Because I have worked hard and have built skills, I can produce. I make more capital in less time with less effort because I have invested in my skills, and so. I don't think that we should ever just excuse anyone and say, you know what, we should just make it attractive to have an unskilled job because there are plenty of people where, I don't know, it's so tough because you see people where you go, let's use the Walmart worker as an example, or the people that used to work for my dad, like, you don't want to employ people that are struggling. Because you're a human being and you just don't want people around you to suffer. I mean, my dad worked really hard to make sure that his employees were taken care of. And it wasn't that he didn't want to pay them. It's just that he couldn't pay them more because then the business wouldn't exist. And so it's not a matter of, I think a lot of times, maybe in big corporations it is, but I think a lot of small business owners who pay minimum wage, it's just because that's what the labor is worth. And so if you don't want to be worth that, you've got to invest in your skills and become more.
But as a society, if we continue to accept the prices that were given by the Harrys of the world in order to not only have the technology but keep the technology secure, then there's less available.
You presume that you can control the market. The market is like gravity.
Well, exactly.
What I'm stating is that I control how my funds are spent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Sure. Okay.
And so if I'm comfortable with the level of technology that I have and I choose not to, in my hypothetical company, and I chose not to hire a Harry and have my security taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And instead I invest my you know, the dollar amount that I have available, my gross profits, if I invest that back into my employees as opposed to
Russian hackers steal your payroll?
Your site gets hacked, your site's down, you don't do business for 4 hours, that means you're...
Hey, if I got to go without ADP because ADP's getting hacked, then I do.
Hey, your site goes... Everything goes down.
As long as the FDIC exists and Greg's got my back with a credit union.
The problem is, that's NCOA. Or NCUA, but that is...
I love NCOA. That's my favorite show on CBS.
That's... All this so is irrelevant though because this all talks about us being relying on technology, but we're also the ones that are the initiators of deploying that technology.
But we don't have to be, is what I'm saying. That's a voluntary situation.
Yes. Oh yeah, but
we look at it as a convenience, and it does get to a point where that convenience becomes costly that it becomes an inconvenience.
But the costs have only been going down over time.
Exactly,
that's the problem.
Technology is becoming so incredibly cheaper. Amazon has been pushing out their Kindles at incredibly cheap rates. I'm waiting for Amazon.
Okay,
to
but
just
you're talking
jump.
About physical technology. I'm talking about the actual information part of it. We're talking about the information.
The information that comes out of it. Anyone can learn my job.
Globalization's what eats them apart.
My skills are in books. There's people in India that know twice as more than I am.
Absolutely.
I've met this guy from Iraq that worked for me that he's incredibly much better than I am when it comes to different pieces of electronics. Only thing I excel better than him is like network and network security.
Right. But I guess my point here is you're saying what happens when my payroll gets hacked, and I'm looking at you saying the first fucking time my payroll gets hacked, I'm no longer using that payroll service, and if that means that I've got to have it done out of the office just like it was petty cash, that is no sweat off my nuts. So I'm not going to put the extra money into paying for your security. I'm going to put the money towards people in my office who are trustworthy and in a manner in which I can control and protect it.
And that's great. That would be amazing if you could do that, but you have to.
But you can't.
Your number of employees have to be low. Then with the government that we have has so many different like tax code that you need the computer to even walk through the minefield, which is our tax code.
This is so beautiful is this is the coming debate.
Right.
And the only question that remains is who's going to have the majority and which sort of political system is going to rule over that?
It really just depends on the circumstances. I think it depends on the circumstances that exist at the moment that we get there. At the moment that we get to the point where it matters who's got the majority on this particular argument, it's going to depend what rate people in Harry's position, people who do technological security, what rate they're charging, and
well, their rate's only going to go down.
Well, the thing is, they're going to be replaced by artificial intelligence. If you don't pay me to keep my white hat on, I'll put on a black hat.
Whoa! Hey.
Yeah.
Well, most people will. And so what I'm saying is when enough of you do, we will completely fucking obsolete you as a society.
Or come after you.
Because we will have no option.
Well, the demon...
We will have no option left other than to eliminate you.
Your government has put you guys all on the grid. Your TPSM sensors, what they try to say, like, hey, they can't be hacked easily. I've got a $20 device that picks up TPMS sensors. I can have people trace
but
people.
But for your average self-sufficient individual, there's not a damn thing that we are so wholly reliant upon the grid for that we would be willing to tolerate.
And that's awesome. That's great. That's amazing. To be perfectly honest, like, I wish I could walk away from technology.
I
love it. Yeah. Those 11 days that I'm at Porkfest, I freaking love it. I get on my laptop.
You love being around all those libertarians.
I love it. I love it. I like it because on day, like,
could you imagine?
About Monday, my laptop dies. I was like, okay, my laptop is dead. My phone is dead. I have no communications, and I'm just around people. I enjoy that.
Yeah, I think that's a huge. I will tell you,
I am with you to some people.
Right.
We
get Harry out of the house more.
I love technology because technology makes it possible for you to listen to us, and we have the ability to hopefully build a business out of this at some point. But I will tell you. I've turned the notifications off on my phone. Like,
completely.
You know, if you guys want to get a hold of me, you better text me because I can't take the messenger notices.
And then it better be important.
Facebook.
You better mean it.
Yeah.
Because I just...
If it's a picture of your kid, you're getting hit.
I just can't take the constant distraction anymore. And
yes.
You know, I'm all about simplifying my life. How simple can I get everything? And technology just makes that difficult because there's always another website to go to. There's always another piece of news to read.
A researcher recently coined this phrase. I think it was 2 weeks ago at a conference that distraction is the obesity of the mind of our era.
Wow.
I thought that is brilliant because that's the world we live in. And it's infuriating because it changes how you think. It warps how you think. It warps the ability to do long form reading and like linear, clear thoughts because you have so much going on.
What do you think cyberloafing is? That's all cyberloafing is.
Yeah, why are you trying to ruin you today, Harry? I don't love it.
All right, well,
it serves a purpose, though. If you're in an uncomfortable situation or a conversation that sucks and you really just want to avoid it, isn't it nice to be able to be like, hey, that's really neat, Greg. Have you seen Spangle's shirt over here? It's super flashy tie-dye.
That's a good point. Can be used as a weapon, too.
Exactly.
Are you saying this shirt is that bad?
No,
it's just the most distracting thing within my eye shot.
I like to stand out. All right, so let's wrap up. The Luddites were a 19th century English textile workers who protested newly developed labor economizing technologies from 1811 to 1816. The stocking frames, spinning frames, and power looms introduced during the Industrial Revolution threatened to replace the artisans with less skilled, low-wage laborers, leaving them without work. The movement was a rising tide, led to the swing riots. The Luddite movement emerged during the harsh economic climate of the Napoleonic Wars, which saw the rise of difficult working conditions And you can read more about that on Wikipedia. But yeah, the government.
Google some Sony emails while you're there.
Yeah.
I would say that maybe we should check this out and read more into this and talk about this on a future episode because
it's a hot button topic for a lot.
History repeats itself. So
and its political implications
always.
Could not be more enormous.
So
will
just
history continue to repeat itself once we've been obsoleted by artificial intelligence?
History is much like an endless waltz. The three beats of war, peace, and revolution will beat on forever.
So, like always, I want to...
I feel like you deserve a plaque or a bust or something.
Just want to curl up and cry right, at the end of one of that. Our shows.
No, right. Not necessarily, because there are still people stubborn enough to see us through. And hopefully, you know, we'll be fortunate enough that they will be in positions of power and be able to assist us.
All right, let's start with the round table. Gina Bear,
you
get to go first. What is something that we didn't get to talk about or that you didn't get a point to make? Just get up on your soapbox and tell us what you're thinking.
Oh, most of the time I make my points on my soapbox. News-wise, though, I did find some interesting articles that I haven't really had a chance to read in depth, so maybe next show you guys can educate me on the fuss behind Hillary Clinton's international donations and what have you.
That's a good topic, yeah.
I also wouldn't mind some discussion over this whole Sony hacktivist thing because part of me feels like it's just a complete and utter obliteration of their privacy as people, individuals. And then the other part of me is like, well, they are a corporation that has a great deal of influence.
Sure.
So maybe we deserve at least a little bit of information about what's going on. I don't know, like, unrestricted access to their email is necessary, though. Et cetera. So I'm going to pass the mic to Harry. Harry, what you got on your mind? Oh, no. And the minimum wage debate. The minimum wage debate, I think, is going to be a very huge issue in upcoming political.
Yeah, climates. I started to see rumblings of that the last
the
couple days.
And
yeah.
Their $15 push for fast food workers and things of that nature are going to be a big deal in the upcoming political climate.
Several liberal outlets were like, has anybody pressed the Republican nominees like Rand on where they are in regards to minimum wage? So yeah.
And have we done anything, because I haven't been here for a minute, on the RFA, FRA, Freedom
of Religion?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go back. We've extensively covered the gay hate law.
102, 103, I think if you go back to the feed, there's
hate
plenty. Hategate. When we were mad at everybody. Harry! And let me, while we're on that, let me divert before we go to Harry. If you go to Howie Politics Indiana, Howie is a local political site, really cool political site, and you can learn a ton from Howie. But he did a poll, and the lead starts with this way. The political damage to Governor Mike Pence following the RFRA Act is significant, if not historic. And a new Howie Politics Indiana poll, Pence's favorable unfavorable stand at 35 favorable, 38% unfavorable. Ooh. His approval stands at 45% approve to 46% disapprove. And he finds himself in close head-to-heads with three potential Democratic calendars who are all polling well below 20. In the 20 years that HPI has been publishing and in the polling HPI has conducted since 2008, an Indiana governor has never experienced this kind of decline in this short time frame. 59% said the law was unneeded, compared to 30% who said it was necessary. Another 50% believe the controversy surrounding the law will have a negative impact on Indiana and isn't front page news. Here's an interesting fact that I think is really significant. Do you support or oppose adding sexual orientation and gender identity to the law? Adding a law making it illegal in Indiana to discriminate in hiring practices, housing practices based on gender identity and sexual orientation. 50% say yes, you should add that to the Indiana civil rights law. 34% opposed the civil rights law and 12% didn't know. 34% in the state of Indiana, as red as you can get, are for adding it. 54% believe it should be added to the civil rights law. I think that's a significant number and really shows you that in a state that is as Christian and as conservative as Indiana, the state the gay marriage debate is over, and any politician who tries to touch this new third rail of politics is going to get burned. So very interesting polling. And We Are Libertarians, a couple episodes, 2-3 weeks ago, raised the specter of Bill Oesterle, Angie's List CEO, dropping out of his job there to run for governor. And what do you know? Our prediction came true. He dropped out of he quit his job and is now going to get involved in politics. And the rumor on the street is that he will be seeking the Republican nomination in 2016, presenting a primary challenge to the left of Mike Pence. He'll be running on the he'll be running. Well, look at it this way: he's going to run in a Republican primary
as a non-gay hater.
As a non-gay hater. And one who opposed this law, who was all for open hiring practices at Angie's List. And Angie's List also asked for a $40 million bailout to the city of Indianapolis. I'm
guessing his stock options aren't going
to
Yeah,
so he's running to the left. In the 20 years he's run that company, they've never turned a profit.
If there were only another website that could offer reviews that you could verify their credibility on service providers on the internet.
Like, Yelp. Some sort of yellow social. Help. I mean,
Or offering a Facebook status.
Or
some sort of Twitter.
Amazon and Google are getting into their business, so that's not good.
I had friends to ask.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Sounds like a great model.
He's asking for bailouts. He's never turned a profit in his company.
That's an expansion, Chris, for Hoosier Jobs.
Dude, yeah. He sounds perfect for government.
Exactly. The Colts, the Pacers, he's right up right with them.
So that's a little on-the-ground update from that. Harry, my friend, I almost called you my man, but that would be racist.
It's okay. You paid this month fee. Anyways, Sony, I'm not going to let them get off the hook. Screw Sony. It has been close to 5 years since I've updated my PlayStation 3. Screw you, Sony. That April 1st update taking Linux off my PlayStation 3 will not, I repeat, will not.
That is the nerdiest stand on the show ever taken.
I'm sorry. I like Linux on my PlayStation 3.
That goes to all technological, all apps, all of that. If you want me to update so constantly, I'll delete your whole damn app.
Just exactly. Turn on automatic updates. You never need to worry about it, and that way you're secure.
Oh no, Spengel.
You're secure.
Because if there's any kind of a user agreement change or anything of that nature, I want to be aware of it, and exactly. If I don't agree with it, it's gone.
Exactly.
Click, delete, remove, uninstall.
You're telling me you read the terms of service.
I'm telling you that if there's a change in the terms of service that I am uncomfortable with, I will not update, and I will absolutely uninstall that shit.
There's nothing more than I love curling up reading the EULA. Hey, you're talking about from a guy who curls up and reads like, ooh, a new Axis, Cisco Axis Point is out. I love curling up and reading these suckers. That's what I do. I like to read different – I read books, but I read technical books. My entire bookshelf is full of – technical books on how to do different things.
So other things that you are upset about or happy about.
Sorry, the Sony thing has got me.
It's got you in a tither.
You don't understand. I have a PlayStation 3 that I love running Yellow Dog Linux, and I can't wait until the Steam OS comes out in Linux out of beta so I can actually get my Steam OS on my PlayStation 3 so I can actually run Steam OS games on my PlayStation 3. I would love it. Can't wait till I have the ability to tweet that out. But other than that's about the only thing I'm really like totally upset about. It's that whole Sony thing. That has got me in a tizzy. I hate Sony so much with a passion, and it's hard for me to get sad. Yes, I feel bad that their servers were touched, but you know, screw them. You know,
server.
Yeah, server.
Show me where they touched you.
Show me on this doll.
All right. Anything else, Harry?
Other than that, please check out cyberloafing.ninja the Cyberloafing podcast on iTunes. Please give us a listen. The website's going to be down for the next few days because I'm switching over from our old HTML site over to WordPress. It makes it easier for one
sell
of
out.
It makes it easier for out. One of my other co-hosts to blog on there. I was trying to show her how to do it. Hey, this is how you code it. And she's like, I don't get that. All right, here.
Because WordPress is the shit.
It's it's easy, but when I try to do so much technical stuff with it, is I start breaking it because I wanted to do other things that it doesn't want to do.
Created by the NSA.
Everything is an NSA listening device.
Everything's capable of being an NSA listening
device. Everything is an NSA listening device. Right. If you go over in Europe, most routers and switches have stickers on it that say, this is an NSA listening device.
They have stickers that say
seriously?
That?
Yes, people put stickers on them. They're like little hackers put like,
oh, they don't come out of the box like that.
Oh, they probably should.
Well, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, it's
actually, like this, that's everything. That's a valid point. There may be liability in that with products. That might truly be something that should happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, stop buying them.
All right, Harry.
Hey.
Anything else?
That's all I've got.
All right. Greg?
First thing is we've been doing the occasional Rand Paul hating for his sudden leap towards the Christian right in pursuing the presidency. But he did come out yesterday and said, if I'm elected president, I will get the IRS out of your life.
Bullshit.
No, but
I'll
I do
believe
think,
it when I see it.
You know what? I do love to see.
I hate to see politicians make promises they can't back up.
Well, then you should
hate
not
the Republican Party.
Yeah, you should not pay attention to the Republican primary right now.
Yeah, or Barack Obama for not closing Guantanamo.
Except
or,
Chris Christie. You're going to
Iraq
or
Afghanistan.
He closed it that one day, then reopened
it. Actually, he just reopened Cuba.
Yeah.
He reopened Cuba, but didn't close Guantanamo. I feel like that's...
We've got to talk about Cuba next time.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of cigars.
Can we have cigars that episode?
Joe needs to be on here for that, though.
I'll bring my cheap microphones and the cheap board so we can smoke cigars.
That hey. Works.
Not in my damn house.
No, outside.
You got a patio. Oh, okay. Don't be such a crybaby.
You have an estate. You have a estate.
I have a vast estate.
You have a vineyard.
You have a sitting porch where you drink mint and juleps and talk about the War of Northern Aggression.
In his white suit while you watch Mexicans cut the grass. Yeah.
I have roughly 32 square inches out back that you can stand and enjoy.
I've smoked many a thing on that back patio. We'll be fine.
I-65.
He's not cool enough for I-69. You have to pay extra.
What have you been smoking at my house?
Mostly cigarettes.
Ish.
Freedom.
Occasionally your friends. They shouldn't have come at me like that.
Not my friends? Oh, see, I was thinking. Okay,
yeah, I know. It's okay.
I'll tell you.
Greg.
Anyways, Greg.
And then the last thing, and this is pretty incredible, and I wrote about you so this will be no news to you guys. Zawahiri, who is the current head of Al-Qaeda, will probably announce the disbandment of Al-Qaeda as a network
within
the next 2 weeks because of the success of the Islamic State. So you're talking about the end of an era.
Wow.
And the dissension, according to several foreign policy experts, he was worried for so long. The letters we got at Abbottabad, the compound during the raid, show that the letters between him and Osama bin Laden, they were very, very concerned with people pledging allegiance to Al-Qaeda that were in no way, shape, or form affiliated. And so it was that decentralization that really bothered him because they couldn't control their behavior. And so he's had a change of heart, and he sees the expansion of the Islamic State as divinely inspired, I guess you could say, Allah's will. And so for the good of the cause, and given the staunch differences between al-Baghdadi, the leader of the Islamic State, the Caliphate, and Zawahiri, he is going to probably announce the disbandment of Al-Qaeda, and they will merge towards the Islamic State.
That's not good.
Well, they're finally going to become extremists.
We pretty much stayed off of religion this episode, but did you guys happen to read the news story about the immigrants who were migrating from Africa to Europe, and a group of Christian passengers were thrown overboard for admitting they were Christians?
Wow, no.
11 of them were just tossed off the ship, and apparently these voyages are happening quite often. And hundreds of people are not making it, and they've just been assuming that it's because of these conditions on board these ships.
A lot of Coptic Christians are fleeing Libya and Syria for Turkey. What they don't understand is that southern Turkey is loyal to the Islamic State, not the Turkish government.
I don't know where they were intending to go in Europe, but they ended up, I want to say, in Italy.
Yeah, Italy is Italy is going to be the first European Union state to fall to fundamental or political Islam is going to be Italy because of their colonization.
Really?
We're coming
Even
to find out
Vatican
has issues. When you colonize and offer everybody dual citizenship, it makes it very easy to travel back and forth, especially when they fall to fundamental Islam and political Islam.
I'll tell you, the persecution of Christians, and I'm not talking about Mike Pence and all their phony baloney Christian persecution that the Christian right seems to have. You know, the Christian right used to complain about the victimization of Al Sharpton and how they played the victim card all the time, and and by they I mean Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton.
Poor Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, the Christian persecution taking place, especially involving young women and the sex slavery trade, the brothels that are in Syria. I mean, we really ought to do a dark episode and really get into what is happening to Christians in the Middle East, because, mm-hmm. you know, it is every bit the Holocaust of Hitler and the Jews.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Except it's on social media, it's easily shareable, and they're nailing them to crosses, which is a bad visual.
Hitler regime hid what they were doing. These people are not hiding it. They are just right out in front.
Yeah, they're completely out in the open. The three people I know from the Middle East are Middle Eastern Christians that had to get the heck out of that region.
Yeah. I think it's tough for us as a libertarian podcast, a libertarian media outlet, to do episodes on the true nature of ISIS. Because then we're accused of being neocons, but I think it's important for us to understand exactly what's going on in the world.
Yeah,
and make
sugarcoat it.
And so if you're done, I will wrap up with my thing.
Yeah, you go,
Harry.
But the thing is, like, you can't please libertarians.
Right.
Libertarians cannot be pleased. You can't even get libertarians to show up to libertarian state conventions. You can't even get libertarians to pay dues or even to join the Libertarian Party. It's a party of individuals.
Right.
Fiercely individual, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We have 15 really good friends that are involved in this project, and none of us agree on anything.
Exactly. I don't even show up to the Libertarian Convention.
I know. But I think that it's a problem in the world, and our job here is to discuss problems and try and find solutions, not using the state. And also to talk about politics and kind of give you our opinion on politics from a different view.
That would be interesting. How would you contend with ISIS without...
So I actually, and I will find it, and I will post it on the Facebook page. I've been meaning to do a post on WeAreLibertarians.com about this. But I heard an interview. Glenn Beck was doing an interview with a guy who started a fund where they are going and they are rescuing women who are involved in the sex trade. And American former military have banded together, special forces guys, Marines, all these guys with on-the-ground combat training who, instead of going back and going to work for police forces or security firms or whatever, have instead started working for a nonprofit where they go over and they're fighting ISIS. They are banding together and are actually fighting. I mean, have you heard about these guys?
Yeah, they're a voluntary coalition. A lot of them, though, are religiously inspired. They're primarily Christians that are going back and see it as their role and their calling to go back over. And that way,
I don't care what motivates you. Just get it done. I'm not going to lie.
You know, if it drags you into a holy war, you're going to care a whole lot.
But you know what?
You know what? I can't
guess what we're there, and it's not by the Christians' choice.
Oh, it isn't close there.
Seriously, though, Greg, either way, if we're getting these people out of the situation where they're being sold into slavery and the sex trade and, like, the heinous shit that's going down in the name of religion, I truly don't care what your motivator is. Just go get her.
But, I mean, we don't do that in Russia. We don't do that in Europe. We don't do that in Africa. Yeah. Like, why does this one matter?
They should all matter.
They should all matter. Right? I agree.
But I like the fact that it's not state-operated. It's just individuals. I also like the fact that, like it or not, the United States is not, quote-unquote, a Christian country. There are people who will argue that we were funded on Christian fundamentals, but that's not necessarily the case because the Founding Fathers were very specific that we not be.
No, we were founded on Greek fundamentals, for sure.
But, I think you can, if you want to go fight in a war, go for it, because that's how ISIS is put together. ISIS is not put together by a state. I'm sure there's state money from Saudi Arabia or other places funneling in there.
Or how we gave them their initial arms to fight Assad in Syria.
Or the United States.
Let's just distribute weapons and see how it comes back.
We burned those receipts.
but, you know, so why can't people from the West get together and form their own little legion of doom, whatever, you know. But don't take my tax money or my money, because I'm anti-war. I'm a pacifist. I don't believe in.
Sure, I'm anti-war, but I'm totally pro-civil rights or human rights.
Sure,
and that's what this falls down to, is a human rights situation.
I'm not unhappy to see people go and fight ISIS. That's for sure, but I don't want to pay for it.
No, I fund it.
So.
Send me your links, all of you mercenaries.
There you go. So, you know, Gina would fund it, but I wouldn't, and so that's how you deal with it.
ChristiansAgainstBrowns.com.
Oh, my God. They don't have to be brown. They can totally be white, as long as they're putting, they're doing wrong.
I like you, Greg.
I'm red.
Oh, sorry.
Racist.
I didn't want to mention Harry again.
Go back to Canada.
You son of a...
Yeah, and you're pink.
All right. That is quite enough of this. We're mixing live, so that music is a little loud.
You missed me.
We did.
It's wonderful to have you back.
Greg,
the good
and I,
doctor. It's good to have back.
Greg and I were talking about how it's more fun when Gina's around, so we're happy to have you back. All right, thank you for listening to this episode of We Are Libertarians, and as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.